Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's Bill Leffin and Wendy Snyder. I haven't worked with you in over two weeks.
I know.
It's been
a long time.
It's been a very long time.
You're all tanned and looking good in shape, eating sugar again.
You know what? I am, but in moderation. I went a month and a half. I didn't have any sugar, and then I just slowly eased myself into it.
My favorite part of you giving up sugar is when you have sugar when you come back to work, because it's like you're drunk on sugar.
Do you remember the cartoon character Ricochet Rabbit?
Ping, ping, ping!
That would be him. I feel like a human version of Ricochet Rabbit. Now, this year, I didn't go overboard. Like, you've seen me in the past, when I can have sugar again, I just blitz myself with it. This year, it was a slow process. But, it courses through my veins, and it just makes me very anticipatory. Is that a safe way to say it?
It is now. Yeah. I like it.
How was Thanksgiving? Everything good?
It was lovely. I spent a lot of money on the Hoka turkey and got a 20-pounder, stuffed it, and also got an 8-pound breast, which I got to tell you, that's a big breast.
That is. They call that a Vergara. In the turkey shop where I frequent, that's called a Vergara.
Shop.
I'd like a Vergara, please.
Everything went well. I got to tell you, I might be with you. I really am not loving turkey.
It's not good. Let's be honest.
It's good. I didn't really have any on Thanksgiving itself.
You didn't have any after all that preparation?
No, we were one chair short at our table.
Oh.
So since I was a busy little bee running back and forth, to and fro from the oven to the table to get the rolls on the table, I decided to just kind of eat in the kitchen.
Is that right?
And I ran out of big plates.
Yeah.
So I had just a little plate, and I don't think I had turkey. I had all the accoutrements.
But not the main
stuffing.
Course.
No. So then the next 2 days, I have had my fill of turkey sandwiches, and they were great.
Yeah.
Like the first one.
Yeah. And then it gets to be a little much, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just doesn't taste like anything.
But be honest, I don't know if you added this up, but if you count all the hours of preparation and all the hours of cleanup, is it worth it?
Yeah.
It is really, yeah.
Yeah, because everybody else enjoyed it. And I got to tell you, Jimmy Mack is the best husband in the world.
Because?
He did all the dishes.
Did he really?
It took him 3 days. He did it in shifts.
He's just finishing now.
He did.
If we call the house, he's just rinsing.
Don't you love the leftovers when you put the gravy on the dressing and everything, but the gravy doesn't really melt in the microwave?
Yeah, it's just...
So it's like globules?
Right.
I love that.
It's like a lava lamp.
It is like a lava
They should
lamp.
Make a gravy lava lamp
for the
Thanksgiving.
Holidays.
They did the Beatles. Why not a gravy one? That's what it looks like in there.
It does kind of.
And my mother-in-law, Annette, is from Corinth, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And she makes the best gravy. Mm-hmm. We never had gravy before.
Because it's praline gravy.
Bill, you know
in
me.
The gravy.
Praline. But all in all, the only thing that was forgotten were the 2 cans of cranberry sauce, which I found the next day.
Oh yeah,
in the refrigerator because I wanted it cold. You have the gelatinous one,
uh-huh.
And then the kind of cranberry sauce like one.
Two cranberry sauces, you rich people.
I know. Tell me about it.
You're living out like the Rockefellers.
I know, but that's the only thing that was missed. And
I know you enough to where I know you felt bad. Did you call the people who came to your house and apologize for that?
I didn't feel that bad. My sister made Auntie Mary's famous Jello, and that was raspberry, so it was close enough where it was almost a cranberry like thing on your plate.
That counts.
Pink berry.
That counts.
It worked.
It's in there.
But all in all, really, really great. How was your turkey day?
It was good. Before I tell you, you were kind enough to call me the day before Thanksgiving because you were very, very excited about something. Do you remember what it was?
No.
You were so excited because your dining room table was clean for the first time in a year.
Yeah. No.
Not
it was
a year?
Clean once. This is the second time
this year that the dining room table was clean. And you only did it because you had people coming over and they would talk if you didn't clean your dining room table.
Well, where would you put people?
You could stack them on top of your stuff.
But something has clicked in me, Bill, because everything was so clean and wonderful.
Was it? Yeah.
And I have actually taken the time to put things away. Like when I took the garbage out, I hung my coat up on the hook. I didn't just put it on the dining room chair.
Doesn't that feel nice? And
yeah.
And really, when you look at it, it's not really that much more effort.
It takes an extra second.
That's it.
But I am so anal now.
Yeah.
I bought myself a nail kit for my early Thanksgiving present to take care of my nails, and I gave myself a little mani.
Looks good.
Thank you.
Hi, little mani.
Hi, Wendy.
And I actually put the nail kit. It was on the counter, and I said, got to keep the counters clean, so I stashed it.
How long do you think your dining room table will remain clean?
Months? No, well, definitely till the end of the year.
All right. That's not bad.
I am going for the whole year.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That's my goal.
Don't you feel like you have another room in your house now? When you look in the dining room, don't you go, look at how clean this is?
I want to have people over. Maybe we could have a live broadcast from my dining room table with the listeners.
Just to show them the table. All right, let's take a quick break. I'll tell you how my Thanksgiving went in just a little bit. If you want to jump in at any point, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. You've known me a long time, and I'm always moaning and complaining about Thanksgiving. And I
get blamed for it.
I know you do. People call and they text in and they blame you.
Wendy the whiner.
I don't know why, but they seem to. On Friday, actually, it was Wednesday. It was the day before Thanksgiving. You weren't here. Hannah Stanley's filling in for you.
Thank you, Hannah, by the way.
Did a nice job. She did a nice job.
Although I wanted to be here for that whole...
There's a lot of stuff going on last week.
I was just talking to myself.
Did you do a show by yourself?
I did. It rocked. I just had so many
callers.
I did.
How did they know
I
to call
I Skyped
it?
Them. Wow. They Skyped me. Woo!
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Good. That's not a bad system. It occurred to me at some point, if I were listening to me just moaning and complaining, going, what are you complaining about? Your life is pretty... everything is going really well in my life. I just don't need a day to think about it. I think about it every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't look around and see the people that I have at home, the people that I work with, my friends outside, the guys I play tennis with, my job. My life is great. I'm thrilled with the way things are going.
Yeah, we know that.
But it's weird to set a day aside to just...
Give thanks?
No, it sounds weird when I say it that way.
Here he goes again. He's whining. I get nailed
for it. It's the way that it's... I don't know. I don't like pilgrims is what it comes down to. I just have a thing with pilgrims. It's the buckle on the hat.
So, you're a pilgrimist.
I guess I am. Uh-oh, we're getting angry pilgrim calls. So a couple of years ago, we decided, my wife and I decided, instead of going through the rigmarole of...
good word. What, you want the little duck to come down?
I didn't think I'd say rigmarole, but I said rigmarole. Instead of going through the...
I'm sorry. Excuse me, listeners, but he said rigmarole, and he looked at me kind of like,
how about that?
See?
That word of the day calendar is paying itself off. I'm glad I bought it. $6. Anyway, we decided let's just go to a restaurant. Let's see if that'll be different. Maybe I'll enjoy it more if we just go to a restaurant.
That's what you do every Thanksgiving.
No, the last two. We did it last year for the first time. There have been a couple of times that I've picked up food from a restaurant and then brought it to wherever we were having Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, that's right. While everyone else was having turkey, you would open up your...
I'd have Chinese food. And everybody would go. They would start out making fun, but then it hit them.
They wanted some.
That General Tso's chicken looks way better than what I'm having, you know? So privately, I had a bunch of relatives come up and go, could I just have a little bit of the shrimp fried rice, just a little bit, like that? It was like a black market of food I was running for a little while.
I always have order envy. I always want what someone else has.
That's what it came down to, order envy. That's what it was. So last year, my wife said, let's just the four of us will go out. Reese, Kylie, me, you, we'll just go out. We'll see if that... It was the best Thanksgiving ever. So we did the same thing again this year. We went to a seafood place. It was so much fun to watch from table to table because the restaurant we went to was a seafood restaurant, but then they also had this turkey dinner special to make it seem like Thanksgiving.
Right.
Well, it was Thanksgiving. And you could see from table to table as the waitress would say, do you want to order off the menu or do you want our special? And every table is like, no, we want seafood. That's why we're here. So I'm not the only one who's going through this. Other people have a similar thought.
It's not about the food. Excuse me as I cough.
You're going to cry. Are you going to cry?
No, it's not about the turkey or the food. It's about getting together and talking about what you're thankful for and drinking. Although
right.
I did not have an ounce of alcohol.
Who are you?
I've turned over a new leaf.
You cleaned the dining room table and you're not drinking.
I bought all the stuff for pomegranate mimosas.
Oh,
and
that
last year
good.
I was ripped on them. Because
really?
I was drinking them starting at 11 o'clock in the morning when I was putting all the turkey gizzards in a pan and the stuffing. So I was ripped
right.
last year.
Right.
And then we played Animal Bingo, because my sister conducts Animal Bingo. She wraps up little prizes. It's so fun.
What's Animal Bingo?
It's a bingo card, and then it would be Crested Newt. And
so you have to see an animal, and then you check it off on your bingo card?
No. She pulls out the name Crested Newt, and you look on your bingo card.
Oh, it's just like regular bingo, but instead of numbers, it's animals.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I thought you had, because you know how car bingo is? If you're driving along and see a Chevy, you go, I got Chevy, and everybody crosses that off. I thought you had to see those animals in your house.
No.
Because no one would ever win. You only have one or two animals in your house.
We have a crested newt, though, I'll have you know. But so last year, I just, you know, it was a bally lizard or something. Yeah. So, of course, last year I was belly high is calling.
Oh, you were ripped. You were drunk on the mimosas.
I was, and this year I wasn't. And my kid said, Mom, you were more fun last year. Why don't you have a mimosa? I said, no.
You know your limits.
I know.
Well, I want to just offer it up. I know that the traditional Thanksgiving is a wonderful thing for many, many people. I like this system better.
Then do it.
Of ordering what I want.
Then enjoy it and don't complain about the way everybody else does it.
No, I'm not. I'm also turning over a new leaf. No more complaining about Thanksgiving. I'm going to say...
Until next year.
Until next year. Next year, I'm going to complain like a banshee. I don't even know if they complain, Wendy, but if they do, I'm going to complain like one, because you know how much I love Christmas, right? I love everything about Christmas.
Because there are presents involved. That's why Thanksgiving is so much better.
I think it comes down to the decorations, because...
True.
Thanksgiving decorations are idiotic. Turkeys are the ugliest animal there is, and pilgrims dressed funny.
You're a pilgrimist.
I'm not a turkeyist, please.
You're a familyist.
No, I'm not. I get to see them a bunch during the holiday season. I really do. I see we get together and you know, and it's great, but I don't know what it is about that holiday. And if I were anyone else telling me this story, I'd go, something weird must have happened to you as a kid on Thanksgiving, and it didn't. I just never bought into it.
Your brother didn't try to put the turkey carcass on your head like Mr. Bean?
No more or less than any other day of the year. The same.
I just, you know, but now you eat turkey all year. You'll have a turkey sandwich.
Hardly ever. Every once in a while.
I like turkey. I got too big of a turkey and then a huge breast. The Vergara. So I'm kind of burnt out on turkey.
So you will not have it now until when? When will you go back?
I don't know, but I just told the boys that I'm making steaks on the grill tonight.
That's better. Now, I do want to say this. Every year there's the debate about whether or not stores should be open or closed for Thanksgiving. For the most part of our ride, we went all the way to Wisconsin for dinner to this seafood restaurant. I know, that seems crazy, right? But we heard good things about this restaurant, so we drove all the way to Wisconsin, and it was good.
So over the river and through
the woods. Right.
To the seafood restaurant we go.
That's what we sang the whole way.
The Jeep knows the way.
Right. There was almost nobody at any shop. I don't know if shops were open or closed, stores were open or closed. I don't know, but on the way home... Because we left there around 9 o'clock, and on the way home, every place we passed, from the outlet malls, you know, when you go through, like, Kenosha, and there's all those outlet malls, filled to the rafters.
Hopping.
We passed Old Orchard, filled like crazy, Golf Mill, filled to the rafters. Like, every place we passed after 9 o'clock, it was like prime time on a Saturday.
That was doorbuster time.
They start those on Thanksgiving. They don't start those the next
day. Where have you been?
I'm immune to this stuff. I didn't know that.
That's why you didn't see any stores open on the way there, because it's like they don't open till, I think the earliest might be noon, a couple stores, but mainly it's like 4 or 6 o'clock.
Is that what it was?
And then look out.
I couldn't believe, like seriously, every parking lot, you couldn't find parking spaces, and this is like at, I don't know, 10 o'clock, 10:30 on Thanksgiving night. So what does that tell us? People get fed up with their families.
No.
Shop. Enough of this talk.
They like the hunt. That's what that tells
you. Is that what it is? But you don't say. Do you save that much money in going out that night? You really do?
Yes.
All right.
I ordered some new fixtures for above the kitchen table and the entryway, and I went online.
You can say chandelier in front of me. I'm all right with that.
All right. Chandelier.
I said rigmarole. It's big word day.
All right. I ordered two chandeliers, and I saved $110.
Did you really?
By plugging in coupons online and then going to my local store and saying, can you meet this price? I want to give you the sale.
And they did it.
And they said, give me the website and the code word, print it up, let me get manager's approval.
Wow.
Bing, bang, boom, done. Saved $110.
More people shopped online over the weekend than actually went to stores.
Yeah, I believe it. And I bought a couple of things for myself.
Little baby chandelier, travel chandeliers for the car.
The Travelier.
Were you a chandelier chef?
The Travelier.
The Travelier. That's the best of the chandeliers. All right, a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. We're thrilled that you're here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, you could do it that way.
I missed all you guys. Can I just say that? I really did.
You were missed, too. Very much. You were. Yes, you were. Kevin, back me up. Was Wendy missed a little bit?
Wendy, you were really missed a little bit.
See what I mean?
I was really missed a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't want to overdo it.
All right.
You know. They do this thing over at 247 Wall Street. That's the name of the website, 247 Wall Street, where they like to rank the 50 states in terms of things. Like they'll tell you the greatest beer in each of the 50 states. Or the greatest place to have sausage in the 50 states. You know?
Are you compiling these lists?
A lot of them are me. I'm not going to lie to you. Well, the one over the weekend that caught my eye was this one. The laziest city in each state. And it caught my eye for several reasons. Number one, I have no idea how you could determine that. Because even if you sent people a questionnaire, the truly lazy people would be too lazy to answer and send back the questionnaire.
Good point.
Right?
Yes.
So I have no idea how they gauge this. And like normally, I like to guess, like I'll read the top, I'll read the header, the craziest sports team in your state. And I go, wow, what would that be? Could it be the White Sox? No. Could it be the Blood? No. Could it be? No. I don't even know how I would guess at which of the laziest cities could be in our state. Could you? How would you figure that out?
I'd go states that are high in bowling, drinking.
But again, it even takes some initiative to get in the car and drive to the bowling alley or to,
I guess,
buy a beer or something. Well, I want to congratulate Carbondale and Marion. You are the laziest cities in the state of Illinois.
Really?
That's what they're saying.
Now, Carbondale, is that Southern Illinois University over in Carbondale? SIU?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. All right. And how would that's lazy?
Lazy U. That's the name of this. That's the name of their college out there, Wendy. Lazy U.
I want a T-shirt that
they
says
don't even
that.
Want to say university. They don't even put a dot on the U. They're too lazy.
Yeah, but so does it mean because there's an abundance of college kids who are lazy?
I don't think they. No. Here's the determining factors and how they decided over at 247 Wall Street why Carbondale and Marion are the laziest of the cities. Percentage of city residents reporting physical activity. So they said point blank, you people of Carbondale and Marion, how many of you are physically active, right? 72.5% said that they were. So that's not bad, I don't think. Percentage of state residents reporting physical activity. Now, on average, if you take all the cities, on average, 77.1% of people in Illinoisans, say that they are regularly physically active, but only 72.5 there in Carbondale and Marion. The obesity rate for those cities is 33.2%, meaning one out of every three people in those cities is obese. Not just a little bit overweight, but obese.
Yeah, but if you ever do those charts, a lot of people are obese according to those. My 16-year-old, I was telling you this the other day.
Yep.
His height and weight chart when he was going to the pediatrician, he had lost some weight when he started some ADHD meds, which
right.
is typical.
Right.
And the doctor kind of said, well, you could have afforded to lose some. And I said, really? Because Michael's always been like a string bean.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you look at the charts, it shows that he should weigh that. I said, but that's wrong. I mean, he wasn't obese, but still,
not.
It said that, you know, it wasn't the, like, he could have stood to lose a few pounds, and I did not believe it. You could see his ribs.
Well, don't they always say that the more accurate reading is the BMI, the body mass index,
yeah.
that's the one, and that's the one where they
calipers.
Yeah, they put calipers on you. And
I walk around with calipers on, just for the heck of it.
It sounds like fun. I would do the same. All right, so let's go with that. Let's say that the obesity rate is slightly askew, although I keep hearing stories about how they've changed sizes in recent years. Do you know what I mean by this? Like, I wear, for shirts, I wear an extra large. Now, when you look at me, do you think there's a guy who's extra large?
Well, your bulging muscles.
I do have the bulging muscles. We both
tripped over that because it was hard to say that seriously.
I said rigmarole already. I'm done for the day. I don't have to worry.
I wouldn't say you're an extra large. And it's weird because my husband is an extra large, but now he's been wearing larges because the largers are, they're bigger. Everything, it depends on the brand, but seriously.
It does. Yeah, it does. But for some reason, clothing manufacturers, to make us feel better about ourselves, have made the sizes off a little bit so that we could say, I can still wear a medium. I can still wear a large.
That's just stupid.
It is stupid. It is.
You take a Sharpie and cover up the M or whatever.
Right, or change it.
Yeah.
Sew in a new letter.
Someone says 100 pounds over your ideal weight is considered obese.
It's impossible to think that a third of the residents, and I'm not
right.
Disqualifying that, but could you imagine a city where a third of the people are 100 pounds heavier than they're supposed to be? That's impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That can't be right.
I am, here's another one, 630. I'm 6 foot tall, 195 pounds. According to the government, I am obese.
Is that right?
6 foot, 195. That's not heavy. And it depends how you wear it.
Yeah, that's true,
it really does.
Too. That's so true.
Some of us have very big brains
right.
that take up some of the weight.
I know that. Not us, but some of us.
Right.
Some of us do.
Bertrand, I bet.
Steve Bertrand's a good example of that.
He's got a big brain.
Large brain Steve.
I love a man with a big brain.
It says here...
I'm not going to interrupt any of that.
No, let it ride. It says in Carbondale, Marion... Now, have they merged?
I didn't know it was like a Homewood Flossmoor kind of thing.
I didn't think it was. They're too lazy to separate. That's what their problem is. In Carbondale, Marion, 72.5% of the residents report regular physical activity, a smaller share than the 77.1% of Illinois residents who exercise regularly. I told you that part. Populations with higher incomes are more physically active and vice versa.
Yeah, because they can afford the health club memberships.
That's it, isn't
it? I'm not kidding you.
That's got to be it.
I know you can go out and walk, but it's not the same.
That's got to be a big part of it. It has to be. In Carbondale, Marion, the typical household makes $41,174 annually. It's the lowest medium income in the state.
So how are they supposed to afford to go anywhere? Even the Y. Remember when the Y used to be really cheap?
Right. It isn't anymore.
No.
No, it is not. It goes on to say less active populations are more likely to have higher obesity rates. Well, that makes sense. And Carbondale, Marion is no exception. Of all the adults in the metro area, 33.2% are obese, a slightly larger share than the state's 27.3% obesity rate. So for the state of Illinois, the entire state, on average, we're 27.3% obese. That's incredible. Adults in Carbondale, that was Wendy. Let the record show, that was Wendy. Adults in Carbondale, Marion, however, are otherwise just as physically healthy as Illinois residents overall. When surveyed, adults in the metro area reported feeling physically unhealthy for 3.6 days out of the last month on average, roughly in line with the statewide response. If somebody stopped you on the street with a clipboard and said, last month, how many days were you not feeling well? Would you have any idea how to answer that?
No, I would pretend that I just got a call on my cell phone, which is how I get rid of everybody
right.
now. That's what I do on Michigan Avenue.
That's better.
Excuse me. Hello. Yes. Okay. Got to go.
Now, I've tried that, but I always say, excuse me, I have a fake phone call. Should I not say that part?
Don't say the fake.
All right. Just take the call.
Also, 30% over your ideal weight is obese.
30% over ideal weight.
I can't do math.
Even that seems high.
618 says, I'm 40 pounds over what the chart says, and I'm considered obese. 616 says that.
I think they need to be more clear on what exactly obese is, because that's too gray of a matter, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, again, if you go by the government charts, which...
There's
Should
no
we
way,
take a break and let me look up some
yeah,
of those charts?
But there's no way a third of the people in Carbondale-Marion, there's no way they could be that. A third of the people obese? That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't.
High. All right, we'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I found some charts. Ideal height and weight from rush.edu. And according to these charts, the height and weight charts,
yeah,
you are overweight.
I'm a big roly-poly. According to these, it puts me in the bracket of roly-poly.
And according to the Mayo Clinic, I punched in your information.
They say I died 4 years ago.
No, it says you're overweight. So now, your BMI, according to your BMI and your height weight chart, you're overweight.
Now, you know me.
I am, you know,
what does it say
Tody Fields. That's
it
what
says
mine
Tody
says.
Tody Fields? That's not polite. I am 5'11". I weigh 185, give or take a pound or two. It fluctuates every day. But according to both of those...
Your BMI is 25.8, and 25 to 29.9 is overweight.
What do I do?
Obese if your BMI is 30 or greater. Tody Fields, Wendy, after she hit menopause.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
So you are not overweight.
I'm not overweight. I'm not.
Kevin, you don't have to reveal your stuff.
No, I just punched it in. What's overweight? Oh, it says I'm overweight right here. Yeah, my BMI is 25.8, it says.
But now, even overweight.
So is Bill's. You have the same BMI?
I guess.
How tall are you?
That's on purpose.
I'm 6 foot, 190.
You know how women get their cycles at the same time if they work together? Kevin and I, our BMIs matched up after we worked together for a month. No one can explain it. So there's overweight, and then the next bracket is obese,
right.
And then it's morbidly obese.
But all right, and I'm not insulting you.
But?
Looking at Kevin and looking at
And this will not end in an insult.
No.
Steve,
get
my lawyer
finish.
On the line. Go ahead.
Quit suing people.
I'm going to sue you. Go ahead.
I look at both of you, and neither of you look overweight in any way, shape, or form.
But?
Kevin,
what?
Kevin really doesn't look overweight.
Oh, that's an insult.
No, but
Kevin looks heavy.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't look heavy as in overweight, but he's bulky. He's got, you know, muscle.
Right, and muscle weighs more than fat.
That's what I'm saying.
It might have something to do with the whole shirtless thing, all you know.
Well, right. Put it on. We've seen
your shirt on. And I'm not insulting you. Come on, he's 30 years younger than you.
Right.
There, that wasn't an insult either.
The hits just keep on coming.
I'm not even participating
so
in this.
So, Bill, you're just a fat old guy, according to that.
That's what it sounds like.
I did not say that.
That's what it sounds like. It's Wendy and Wilford Brimley doing mornings on WGN.
It's Tody Fields.
Tody Fields and Wilford Brimley.
Just wait till you hit menopause and you put on 30 extra pounds that you don't know where it came from.
I dread the day. I'm going to take that
menopause.
Week off. Menopause. Now we're talking. Bring it on. I'm not afraid.
But I look at you. You're in shape.
Yeah.
I would never in a million years go, oh, look at that left guy. He's
look
overweight.
Look at that lump. That's what you want to say.
Your lump. Your
Are
lump.
You going to make me stand next to Kevin now
no.
for before and after pictures? That'd be embarrassing.
I did not say. Come on. Be completely honest. You know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying.
I mean, he's younger. Usually, you know, when you
right.
get older, you change.
Your
ripples
body. And stuff. I don't have any of the ripples.
No,
yet.
But you are not overweight in any way, shape, or
I'm
form.
I'm in better. Seriously,
I've known you a long time. You look.
Aren't I in better shape now than I was 10 or 20 years ago?
Yes,
I am. I am. But
I'm
according
not kidding.
To these, I'm
why it's wrong.
It is wrong.
So if I was Marion in Carbondale, I would be
Marion
pissed.
And Carbondale Howard.
So did you just say that 20 years ago he still wouldn't have looked as good as Kevin?
That's what it sounded like, Steve.
Well, they have different body types.
And Kevin was a baby at the time.
He still looked better than you.
Huey.
Right. When you go stand next to that baby who will work with us someday. All
nope,
right.
It's not a fair
What's
trade.
What's in it for
what,
me?
What, did that baby just pick you up with one hand?
Bam, 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 bam.
But seriously, neither of you are overweight. And according to these charts,
we're
you're
porkers.
Overweight.
We're in the
you're
porker
just barely
category.
In the overweight.
Bill, I think you look great. And
you look
and
good,
you're,
Kevin.
You're handsome and
you're
fit.
Man.
I'm
young.
Going on vacation
you're,
again.
You're wise beyond your years, Kevin.
You look great too, Wendy.
This is how it's... No, just shut up. I looked better. Now, I can say to Bill, you've known me a long time and I look better 20 years ago.
You look better now than 20 years ago.
You cannot keep a straight face.
I have a tick. There, I said
we'll get rid of it.
But, all right, but even, all right, take this aside for just a little bit. Can you decide what the laziest city is in a state just based by the fact that some of them are overweight or not? What if they're overweight but not lazy? You could be really, really heavy but not be lazy.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, I think someone, and I think you said this when we first started this.
What?
Some texter said, you send out the questionnaires, and the least amount of questionnaires you get back, that's the state
right.
that's the laziest.
Don't you think?
That's the way to do it.
Right. Because I know bigger people who are not lazy at all, who do stuff all the time, and then I know skinny string bean people who are extremely lazy.
I know that it's skinny fat.
I know exactly
what you're talking about. Yeah. And I'm just a procrastinator, so I wouldn't send mine back until the study was over by a year.
Right. I hope you're still taking these. I just finished mine. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. I'm going to run around the studio and just burn off some calories really quickly. And
Kevin, you don't need to.
More of the show. It's Tody Fields and Wilford Billman on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are back together again after a couple of weeks off for the Thanksgiving holiday. Bill, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Were either of your girls into drama or plays when they were in school?
Both of them. Kylie more than Reese, but a little bit, yes.
My older son, Michael, just started junior high, and he decided to try out for Bye Bye Birdie.
Uh-huh.
And he just wanted a very small part. He wanted to be the bartender. And then I thought, boy, we're bad parents if that's what he's striving for.
That was his goal, sure.
I can reach my mom and dad by being the bartender.
Right. Finally, I'll get the attention I crave. Finally.
Well, so he tried out, and the drama teacher, a lovely woman, said, Michael, why don't you sing something else? And he ended up being Conrad Birdie and Bye Bye Birdie.
Not bad.
And my husband and I look at each other while we're watching him going, did you know he could sing? No,
yeah.
Did you know he could sing? And he acted and did such a good job. And
yeah.
I think he's now in high school, and he's going to try out for Legally Blonde coming up soon.
He won't get the lead in that. I know it for a fact.
You never know.
Well, we'll see what happens.
You never know. It's called acting, isn't it?
Oh, that's true. All right. Good point.
All right. So I like drama kids. And I think what do they say? If you knew now what you knew then, I would have totally been in the theater.
Yeah.
At our high school.
Yeah.
Back then, it wasn't that big. There weren't that many kids in it.
But now it's huge.
I would have been in AV club.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been in
Mathletes, probably Mathletes.
I don't think I would have gotten
no.
in. But I definitely would have done drama. And we have a drama teacher on the line with us right now. And I believe you're on the other side of the pond, as they say. Michael Neary. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How are you, Michael? Everything
Hello.
Good?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yes, I can tell he's on the other side of the pond because of that lovely accent. We were talking about drama and theater and came across this story on the internet, and I couldn't believe it to be true. So we thought we'd have you on to explain it. You're a 26-year-old drama teacher. You're in Kidderminster, wherever that might be.
Yeah.
And where is that?
Near Birmingham, in the center of England.
Is that Upper Kidderminster or Lower Kidderminster, Michael?
Kidderminster's not big to have an upper and lower. It's just Kidderminster.
All right, that's fine.
All right, so you're a drama teacher, and I don't know if you heard us talking, but both of our kids were in drama, and I think it's really cool, and boy, everybody wants to be an actor. So you have a kid in your class, but then all of a sudden his mom wants him out of the class. Why don't you explain this story?
Yeah, so the mom had actually come down with her two children, a boy and a girl, to sign up for the class. And unfortunately, before they're even due their first class with me on the Monday, she decided to pull the children out. And she did that via text. And it was down to my lifestyle, referring to my sexuality. And it was her belief as a Christian that I would be a negative influence on her children should she come to class. So she pulled them out.
Do you mind if I share this text that she sent you?
No, go for it.
All right, first of all, this is so rude to begin with, but second of all, texting it.
Right.
You know?
Very impersonal.
Absolutely.
Very.
It's like being dumped the horrible way.
It is like being dumped. Or duped, as
yep.
you say. Hi, Michael. Following our chat this week, I have decided that my kids, blah, 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 and blah, 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 will not be...
Ridiculous names, let me point out. Both of those names are silly.
I have decided that they will not be attending class on Monday. You have a strong reputation for performing arts, which encouraged me to sign my children up for classes. I have recently learned of your lifestyle, and as a Christian... I cannot allow my children to be influenced by unconventional ideas. It is our belief that a man should marry a woman. I look forward to receiving my deposit, which you may post to me via check. Regards, and then her name. Okay, first of all, that is so unbelievably rude.
Yeah.
And to text that, why? I mean, whatever. So did you text her back?
I did. I sent a quite lengthy reply back to her.
Do you want to share it or shall I?
Yeah, could you share it? It's on my phone, which I'm talking to you on. I'm not prepared. I do apologize.
Okay. No problem. All right. It says, "Hi, so-and-so." She's got a crazy name, too.
Boy, does she.
This is from Michael, the responding text that he sent. "I would be lying if I said I was disappointed to hear this. I pride my students on the respect and love they have for others and their passion for equality. You would only be infringing on our family. As far as I'm aware, my sexuality doesn't affect my ability to teach, just like it wouldn't affect a doctor's ability to treat one of your children should they become unwell. I'm sure your children's health would come first should they need emergency treatment, or would you need to check the doctor's lifestyle prior to their life-saving operation. I wish you luck in finding an appropriate stage school that meets your needs. However, from experience, I find that theater without gays is like cooking without spices." Just my opinion. "I hear Stagecoach are enrolling, but their teachers have been known to wear mixed fabrics, which I'm sure you are aware is forbidden in the Bible, Leviticus 19:19. Please feel free to come see our musical, Happy Days. Confetti will be used in the finale, but please rest assured this is not an attempt to corrupt your Christian lifestyle. We just love glitter. Unfortunately, deposits are non-refundable, but don't worry, your deposit has been donated to Stonewall, an LGBT charity. Regards, Michael." Great job.
Well done.
Sorry, there's my students laughing in the background. They love it.
Well, so what do they think about all this? Because you're famous now. You're a YouTube, or not a YouTube, but an internet sensation.
They were horrified by it. They really do love each other. They're a wonderful bunch of kids, and they really do love equality. You know, we've got lads who love football. We've got the geeky lad. We've got everyone. We've got. And they're all looking at me like, "Who's the geeky one?" but everybody's different, and that's really what I wanted to say, is that actually your children would be more than welcome to come here, and in fact they'd probably have the best time, because everyone here gets each other and it's a safe place for everyone to come every week and be with each other. So they were quite horrified by it and didn't quite understand where she was coming from, because it's nothing we really talk about. Some of the older students, no, I think naturally. I don't go around wearing latex and PVC and waving the rainbow flag, but it's not really hard to guess either. So they sort of knew. And, you know, we talk about Andy sometimes, my partner, and some of the younger ones, I think they didn't really either way know or care really. I just teach them drama. So when they did find out, it was because of that reason that they were quite horrified by it.
Do you know how many, I mean, we've had teachers growing up, and I knew nothing about their personal life. I didn't know if they were married. I didn't know if they had a dog or a cat. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with what you're teaching in that class.
No, but I believe that in order for the LGBT community to be more representative, for it to be more normal, which is what people want, I think, for it to be more constant and fluid, then teachers, as a starting point, need to be honest about who they are. I don't hide who I am. I've had students ask me point blank, you know, they're curious, "Are you gay, sir?" Well yes. Does that affect my ability to teach you? Well, no, it doesn't. Oh, okay. And we carry on with the class. It's not really something I think should be hidden. I think it should be something that's celebrated and give children that chance to see that it is what it is, and maybe that child in the class will see it for that, who maybe is struggling with themselves and maybe feels that they now have that energy and that support to come out and be true to who they are, because their teacher is that way and their teacher's not bothered either. That's just me personally, and that's how I live my life. I'm a very open book and always have been.
Michael, I have to say the progress that's been made in one quick generation. My daughters have friends, male and female, that are gay, and it's no big deal to them. They have teachers that are gay and know plenty of people, and it doesn't faze them in the least. And I think that shows we're making some progress.
It really does. I mean, I remember being a student in primary school and me saying to my mom, "That teacher's gay," knowing full well he was. I knew what it meant. But my mom almost... Again, she's been educated as well, but back then it was a very different thing, and she was almost treating it like it was a rude thing. You know, you can't say that about him. But to me, I think I was mature already back then and knew that it wasn't a big deal. It's just something I observed, and I think the world's come a long way with that. And now, I mean, my students, I don't think have even brought it up unless it's really how's home, how's Andy. It's not
sure.
Really,
or what are you getting Andy for Christmas or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Or, you know, oh, we want to meet him. Actually, he's come out a couple of times. He's come to a few events and things like that, and the parents have met him. But it's not really as different as if I had a girlfriend called Andrea. I don't know. That's me just trying to throw a name out there.
Well, even if you look at the other big school in England, Hogwarts, Dumbledore is also gay, so it's not unprecedented.
Yeah, one of my students, Molly, has just gone, he's what? He's gay?
Yep, Dumbledore is, yes.
I've never seen any of the Harry Potter movies.
Well, they don't go into detail in the movies, but in the books they mention it.
I don't know if I should believe you or not.
You can believe me.
Michael, how many...
Dumbledore is...
Go ahead.
No, sorry, I'm just getting it. Molly is, I think... Her whole reading childhood has changed.
Oh, no. Molly, it's okay. Everything's fine.
Michael, how many kids are in your class right now?
We've got 24 at the moment, 24 students. And we are growing ever so steadily. We've got two major shows coming up. So we're getting children every day, really, as we speak, sort of ready to start with us after Christmas. So we're a very close family.
And what is the age range?
We range from 6 to 18, so quite a hefty age range, but we split the classes, and then they come together for the show, and the younger ones get a bit to do, and the older ones obviously carry the show with the lead parts and things like that, and they all learn from each other as well, which is nice.
And Michael, again, who's the geeky kid in your class? You were going to name his name earlier, but you forgot to. No, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it. It's all right. Well, Michael, honestly, we're so proud of you, and you always hope that we're moving forward, and it's so depressing to think that a parent would pull a child out of class just for something minor like this. It doesn't make sense to us, but you seem to have handled it beautifully.
It's life's too short to worry about what other people think of you, I think. And also, I have to make a point of saying that I don't think of that woman as a Christian and those are her beliefs. I think of those as her beliefs, and she happens to be a Christian. There's plenty of Christians out there that have so much love. My singing teacher is a Christian. I've got Christian friends. I've got Muslim friends, and it's not something, again, that's an issue. So I like to say that it's her opinion, not her religion, I think. I think she just used that as a stigma to sort of pull her kids out. But we have loads of fun. You know, we're having a great time over here. So you've caught us in the middle of a rehearsal, so thank you for speaking to us. Yeah, it's been great.
Absolutely. And why don't all your students, like, yell something? Just, I want to hear how many kids are behind you right now.
Okay. They can all say hello.
Sure.
They're all really good at being frightfully British. We're trying to get them... I'm trying to get them to learn an American accent for Happy Days, and we're doing Legally Blonde ourselves next year as well.
Oh.
And trying to get them to learn the American accent.
Here, you can talk like this, kids.
See, this is how it should be done. I'm going to get them to say hello in an American accent, and you can be really offended by it.
That's fine.
All right, go.
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
That sounded like a bunch of American kids. That's fantastic.
He's Michael Neary. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and good luck with Legally Blonde and Happy Days that's coming up.
Thank you very much.
All righty.
Take care, Michael. Thanks.
What a great guy.
Isn't he?
And how fun would that be in class?
Yes.
Don't they go to school
in England? I think it's part of school, I think.
No, this is a special, it's separate? I think.
Wow. I thought it was part of the school curriculum. That's even better.
I know. Get That's out perfect. Of school to go to acting class?
I would love that.
Me too.
All right, a quick break and then more show ahead.
Hello.
Bill Levin, Wendy Snyder. That sounded good too. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, those kids that we just spoke to in Michael Neary's drama class, I wondered why they were not in school.
Yeah.
But someone has explained that it's 5:20 in England right now. I forgot about the time change.
Oh, right. So they've had their regular school and now they're taking extra classes, an acting class. Okay, that makes more sense.
Because given the option, I'd rather go to that kind of school than school.
Right. So there is a time difference. It's 1879 there. It's Dickens' time there. They all wear top hats.
Yes, they do. All right. They were probably already finished with school for the day. England is six hours ahead.
They sounded tired.
No, they didn't. After school. Boy.
Don't kids in England just pop into a pub and have fish and chips after school? That's the way I picture it. Am I imagining that? That's the way it should be.
I think you are. God, I'm stupid.
Why? What
because
do you say
there
that?
Are 20 texts saying they're out of school. I forget about the time change.
I knew there was a time difference, but I didn't know how dramatic it was.
I guess I knew, but I wasn't thinking about it at the time because everything revolves around us right here in this studio.
Right.
In Chicago. Wait, Chicago time.
Right. We're focused
Damn
on
it.
This.
British kids.
These kids in Britain.
All right. Speaking of British people,
taking lifts and talking to bobbies and doing the things that British kids do. I can't keep
track. What are bobbies? Kids named Bobby?
Police officers.
Really?
Yeah.
Bumper shoot.
Umbrella. I speak English.
Occasionally,
I knew some people who come from England.
Well, we're going to talk to a magical man, Glyn Johns, who was a sound man for a ton of British acts, like the Beatles. Have you heard of them?
Heard of the Beatles? Sure.
He was born just outside of London. Hello. His name is Glyn Johns, and he engineered or produced some of the best albums in the world. Abbey Road with the Beatles. He worked with Led Zeppelin, Eagle debut album, Who's Next by The Who.
Wow.
That's when they're all, on the cover going to the bathroom.
Right. I remember that.
Steve Miller Band. He ran into Bob Dylan, Glyn Johns did at an airport, yeah. And Dylan knew of him, and at the airport said, "Hey, man." How would he say it?
"Hey, man.
Would you produce my next record?"
Like that? Yes. That's a reenactment, by the way.
That was very good. Celebrity voice impersonated.
Sure.
Right. So, yeah, life recording hits with the Rolling Stones, The Who, Led Zeppelin, The Eagles, Eric Clapton, The Faces. It's Glyn Johns, sound man. We're going to talk to him in the second half of the show. I am geeked out and very excited about it. And also, a former Bear will be coming in with us the second half.
Charles Peanut Tillman, a longtime Bear, and we miss him. We could use him.
Yeah.
Right? Don't
Although,
you miss him?
I'm sorry, dude. Can you believe we beat the Packers at Lambeau Field on Thanksgiving Day on Brett Favre Day?
Isn't that something? How could that be? The world's topsy-turvy.
I know.
I don't understand it. We'll also, in the second half of the show, discuss the Charlie Brown Christmas special, which tonight is celebrating its 50th anniversary. We'll tell you some things, as many times as you've seen the Charlie Brown Christmas special, some things you probably don't know about it. All that's coming up in the second half of the show later on from 1 to 3.
Yeah, I forgot that we did a split shift
yeah,
when I was off.
Yeah, second show. Yep.
All right.
Steve Bertrand in the middle. That's a game they play. The kids in England play. Want to play Steve Bertrand in the middle?
Hello.
Okay. Hello. All right, a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. It's the return, everybody, of our friend Eric Zorn. Chippy Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Why did you go with Chippy?
Somebody wrote me a letter last week describing my... I wrote her an update as to my life, and she said I sounded chirpy, which is...
Chirpy doesn't sound good at all.
Chirpy isn't me, so I thought, should I be chirpy? No, I'm actually, I feel more chippy, like ready to fight, ready to tangle. So.
I feel dippy.
Well, it's a combination. Yeah. Chippy is a combination of chirpy and dippy.
I think it might be.
I can name all seven of the dwarves.
Go.
Right.
I'm Doc.
Are you Doc?
I'm Doc.
I'm Bitchy. Wasn't there a dwarf Bitchy?
I think they cut him out of the movie, but originally there was an eighth dwarf. Yeah. that's when Disney wasn't ready for controversy. They just weren't ready. Haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. Have the last couple of weeks been good for you?
They have been. Yes. I got away to Pittsburgh for Thanksgiving. And
family members of yours or Johanna's?
Johanna's mom is living in Pittsburgh, and we took our son Ben back to college via Pittsburgh.
How did that go? Was that good?
It went great. It was really terrific to see him. He didn't come home and reject all my values.
Oh,
which
well, that's
was,
a,
which
that's
was nice,
progress.
Because I was kind of thinking that might happen over Thanksgiving.
No, there wasn't enough time.
In his freshman year. But he did come back. He left, and I was probably a better musician than he was, and he came back, and now he's better than I am.
So, oh, is that hard for you to stomach?
Yeah, it's actually, of course, I'm very proud of him for upping his game.
Well, you
like
want
that.
Your kids,
oh, yes.
Whatever you're doing, you want your kids naturally to do, if they're doing it, do it better, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it was very cool to see that he was being very patient with me about the notes I was playing and so on. So it was really cool.
Wow.
It was,
nice fiddle jam.
He's actually really quite good now, and I'm still the same old skill level. So
my husband's like that with Michael playing guitar. They would do stuff together, and Jim will just go, "I was never that good."
Yeah.
Yeah, but in practice,
but
and
it's very
younger.
Cool. I mean, at one point, at some level, you think like, "Well, wait a minute, kid, come on! I got you. I've taught you everything I know.
Right.
And now this. Now you repay me with this talent of yours.
Who needs that?"
And Johanna was saying to me, she's like, "Well, why is that?" And I said, "Well, I think you know, some of it is just he's just good at it. And the other thing is that he's got this dexterity of youth
yeah.
that I no longer have. That he can do things with his fingers that I just can't anymore."
I just hope when Bill's girls start collecting toys, they have a bigger collection
yeah,
than
wouldn't
you.
That be great?
You
know. That would be
no,
fantastic.
You would steal from them.
Dad, you just have
I would. I would definitely steal from them. I'm not even going to pull punches. There have been so many big stories here in town and nationally since we've talked to you last. If you wouldn't mind, Eric, let's start out with the Laquan McDonald story, which is just plain awful.
It is just awful. And the thing that strikes me is, I mean, it would have been bad if we had seen this video 2 or 3 weeks after it had happened. What just makes the whole thing terrible is that it was 400 days.
Right.
You know, 13 months before we saw what happened here.
That's why I believe we should not have seen the video. I really believe we should have
held back.
Yes, we didn't need to see it, but I think the same result should have happened where the officer was arrested. But why did we need to see it?
Well, we need to see it because as a matter of principle, you need to have these things be public record. You can't hide
Why don't
these
they
things.
Say, we watched the video, here's what happened.
Trust us, we're from the government?
No, this police officer was obviously not in danger or fear for his life because there were 5, 6, 8 other cars around. He just got out of the car and shot, so we are going to arrest him for attempted murder.
I read about this video for several weeks before it came out. I mean, it was clearly rumbling. John Cassidy done a column saying, "Look out, Chicago, this video is coming." And I still wasn't quite ready for watching it and seeing just how gratuitous that shooting was, how that cop gets out of the car.
Doesn't even hesitate, it appears.
Yeah, he was like 3 or 4 seconds before he's emptying his gun into this kid. And I mean, I think that seeing that really does underscore how unnecessary it was and how horrible that shooting was. But again, to think this video, Superintendent McCarthy had to see this video several days after it happened. The state's attorney's office had seen this video. The federal government, the Department of Justice had seen this video. I'm hoping that Mayor Emanuel, he said he didn't.
He says
he
not.
Said no.
He says he didn't see it, but he gave the family $5 million. The family didn't even have to file a lawsuit. They basically gave him $5 million.
And the family who didn't even really raise him. That's my question.
Yeah.
This kid in and out of foster homes, why does the biological mother get the money when she wasn't helping him?
You think they'd have split it up among the foster families that helped the kid. But yeah, I mean, certainly it was terrible and that, you know, I don't have any problem with that settlement necessarily, but what I do have a problem with is how this all happened, how the city council voted for it. And the black alderman and the white alderman rubber stamped this $5 million settlement. I don't believe that the mayor didn't see the video.
I don't either.
I can't believe that he couldn't have. But if he didn't, I think he was negligent. How do you give $5 million of your own constituents' money
His
over
advisors,
to his family?
Listen, no need to see this. Keep your hands clean.
But come on, you're the mayor. You know, how busy are you that you can't? I mean, how long did that video take to watch? It was like a minute.
Right.
The central part of that video is a minute long.
Officer Van Dyke has, to put it politely, a checkered past. Why isn't there some system that kicks in when somebody is a problem child? Why did it take so long and end so drastically? Why didn't somebody say, hey, here's a guy with a really bad record. We got to take a look at this guy.
Well, you remember he was on desk duty for a year.
Yeah.
He didn't have a gun, but they paid him, I think. You know,
why not fire him?
But that happened after the McDonald's shooting, right?
Right. Well, what this whole incident, and you know, Wendy said, why do you have to see the video? The video galvanizes people. The video gets people excited. It gets people focused on the changes that need to be made in the everyday review process.
But it incites hatred.
Yeah, but maybe some good. I mean, I do think some good will come of that. I think that these kind of incidents they are the cumulative effect down the line is going to be that we're going to have a more transparent, more accountable process of reviewing citizen complaints against police. I think that we are going to have better equipment. We're going to have the body cameras. We're going to have microphones that are actually turned on, so we can hear what happens.
There's audio. I mean, you can hear the sirens.
There isn't audio. See, the thing is, these are dash cam videos, and I think there may be some mild audio in the background of those. But the audio that you get, remember the Sandra Bland case down in Texas where the cop pulls over the woman and they get into a fight and she killed herself in jail? You heard the entire exchange between the officer and the woman in the car because he had a microphone clipped to his
like
vest.
A lavalier yes. mic kind of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. And that's battery powered. And evidently what they're saying is that the batteries weren't correctly installed, not only in Officer Van Dyke's, yeah, in Officer Van Dyke's microphone, but a bunch of the other cops on the scene didn't have theirs on either.
Come we're hearing the sirens?
Well, because I think there may be some audio component to the dash cam videos that is maybe just on the outside of the car. I don't know how where the sound is, but you don't hear any of the officers talking.
Is it safe to assume, because there was a buyout in this case, they paid them off, that that's going on a lot more frequently than we know?
Well, all the payoffs are certainly public record.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's in response to a suit, and the city will get a lawsuit and they'll say, you know what, we can take this to trial, but the expense of a trial and the downside risk of going to trial, of course, is you get a huge judgment. I mean, who knows what a jury would have done with this case? If you get a sympathetic family up there and you get this execution on video, $5 million is probably pretty cheap.
I have a question too about the other officers responding to the call that pulled up. I know that there is a fraternal order of police, and I know that people stick together, but I was talking to my 12-year-old son Dylan about this, and I said, okay, so you're a police officer and your partner does something horrific.
Yeah.
Do you go back and tell the sergeant, I hate to do this, but I got to tell you, something was not right? And Dylan said, absolutely. And I said, I know that police officers stick up for one another, and the majority of the cops are great, and they put themselves in danger for us every single minute of their day.
Yeah.
I understand that. But just, I'm shocked that no other officer said something like, listen, I got to fess up. This was bad.
One of them may have, because the reason this story became public at all, it got beyond just the first day's coverage, was that somebody dropped a dime on Jamie Calvin, who's an independent journalist and investigator, that hey, this ain't right. You got to look at the autopsy report. You got to try to find this video that was there. So somebody did, and it was presumably a police officer, although it might have been one of the witnesses. One of the outrageous facts about this case is coming to light is that, or allegations about this case, is that the police didn't take the names of the witnesses who were there, and instead they shooed them away. There's also this other issue of the video at Burger King, right? The Burger King surveillance
cameras. The edited
cameras.
Video.
Well, And that video probably wouldn't have shown the actual shooting, but it would have shown events leading up to the shooting, and also events after the shooting. And what that video might have shown is police getting rid of the witnesses, telling them to go away, not taking their names. There was a cover-up that happened after this happened, clearly because the police, the statement that came from the Fraternal Order of Police, the union, was that Laquan McDonald lunged at the police officer, and that's why he had to fire. That video removes any doubt that that happened. Now,
yeah.
I don't think that the union representative wasn't on the scene. He took the word of the officers he talked to. Those officers were participating in this cover-up of this crime. I think it's got to go deeper. They've got to find out who among those officers, who went into that Burger King, as you point out, there's part of it missing. 86 minutes of video is missing from their surveillance from before and after the shooting. And Anita Alvarez says, well, there's no evidence that there was any tampering done. Well, it's like coming home. You come home from vacation, you find your TV set gone, and they say, there's no evidence of a burglary.
Right.
Well, what do you mean? This one thing is missing that ought to have been there. It's appalling. And that's why this is such a big story, which is not, I mean, what we can understand one officer. I mean, we can understand, we can certainly put this into a framework. One officer has a bad day, or and fires his gun when he shouldn't, misperceives a threat. You know, that's always going to happen. We're never going to stop that. But what we can stop, what we can change, is the culture around that. Wendy, that you point out, this cover up, this idea that no one's going to tell the truth. And that,
how could you sleep at night? Like, Bill, if you did something so heinous,
yeah.
I couldn't. I'm sorry. I'm right. A rat. I couldn't sleep and live with myself for not turning you in.
So do your heinous things when you have a guest host.
I would do that. Yeah,
when I'm on vacation.
That's the only way to do it. All right. More of this sort of discussion coming up next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And our friend Eric Zorn sitting in on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. We're discussing the Laquan.
He's chippy.
He is very chippy.
Yeah,
you can't deny
that.
Don't cross
me today.
Uh-uh. We're discussing the Laquan McDonald story that just gets weirder and weirder as time goes on. A lot of people want to talk about it, Eric. We're 312-981-7200.
And Dave has an interesting question. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Eric and Wendy and Bill, thank you for covering this. A real quick couple of questions. One, the only thing that we saw that took place amazes me is that when he was down, nobody went over to check on his live ability. They kicked away the knife, and that was about it. Secondly.
And was that the officer who shot him who walked over to kick out?
No, his partner.
Oh, okay.
It was another officer.
Okay.
It was another officer. The other second question that I want to throw out is they keep talking about the lunge. He lunged, he lunged, he lunged. He was high on PCP, yada, yada, yada. How do you get that question answered? You do an autopsy, and then you find out, unless he had volunteered, I'm high on PCP, and I'm going to lunge at you. We're going to shoot you.
Right. They didn't know the PCP till after the fact. So when he was shot.
I'm up in an autopsy.
Good points. We have to let you go, though, Dave, because we're running out of time. So listen for Eric, the Chippy Eric Zorn's comments on that.
Well, you're clearly correct that you'll say when you say that he lunged at him. Again, there's no evidence of that at all.
He was walking away from the officers.
The opposite. That was shown that was just a lie. And so the cops lied. And it's very disappointing. And again, it's going to happen. But what you have to have is in place. You have to have investigatory systems and transparency and that kind of thing, so that you can catch this kind of stuff, so that it doesn't happen.
I have a question. When the officers or whoever came to Burger King and said, "Can we have access to your video?" Of course, you hand it over. You don't need a search warrant for that, do you?
Well, there's a system there, and apparently they asked for the password, and the manager on duty had to call the regional manager to get the password.
Because that's where I would say, we'll make you a copy and give it to you. Don't take the original, because look what happened.
But you got a bunch of officers coming in right after a shooting saying, we need to see this right
it's
away
imposing.
To see what's going on. You know, you're fairly intimidated by it. Yeah,
technically
you should. But, you know, obviously Burger King has nothing to hide. They say, yeah, sure, look at our, yes, if this can help you out, we want to be a good member of the community. I think if I were the manager of the Burger King, I'd say, sure. I wouldn't expect them to go in. And
do you think someone's going to, people have said Anita Alvarez will lose her job, or Superintendent McCarthy, or even Mayor Emanuel. Do you think anyone will lose their job over this?
I think Superintendent McCarthy will.
Do you?
I do. Anita Alvarez is running for re-election. She's got a primary in March against a very creditable opponent, Kim Fox, who's got a good resume. So that's going to be a very interesting race. And Mayor Emanuel will stay, and he was just reelected this year. He's got three more years, and I see absolutely no chance.
Is that why the delay?
Well, there's certainly a school of thought that says that he did not settle with his family until after the election.
Yeah.
And that's why it didn't happen. That's why it was delayed. Ben Jarafsky in The Reader makes the point that if he had just come out like a year ago now and said, let's see this video, let's get a prosecution going, he could have been the hero. It wouldn't have cost him the election. It would have been a heroic move on his part.
There were rallies and protests and demonstrations the last couple of days, as you would expect. But can you imagine what will happen should, for some reason, they find Van Dyke innocent or he skates for whatever reason?
Well, I don't think that could happen.
I don't think that
would hope not.
Yes, I mean, you can imagine that.
I'll be right out there protesting with everyone.
It's going to be interesting whether they can get a first degree murder charge to stick. Now, first degree murder is a higher threshold than a killing. I mean, it's not just bad judgment.
Right.
There's malice aforethought into him killing Laquan McDonald. It could have been though that Alvarez made sure that she had the highest charge. They can negotiate down from that.
Yeah.
I right now I would not give strong odds that they're going to get a first degree conviction. But I'm sure. Well, I'm not sure, but I would suspect strongly that it's going to be a conviction of some sort. You're right. If he's acquitted, yeah, that's going to be
a problem.
As I said, and as I will continue to say, I know that a police officer that goes out there and faces dangerous situations every day as part of their job to protect us, I feel in my heart that, you know, 95 to 99% of them are great. There's always going to be a rogue person in any place, be it a police officer, a mailman, a radio personality.
Well, radio personalities are the worst. Yes,
the worst.
So no disrespect for police officers out there at all.
Right.
I know they just want to get home and have dinner with their family.
Sure.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly right. And I think that the good ones, I'm sure they do want systems in place. They don't want to be the one to be the Serpico, the guy who writes people out. But I'm sure that they do think like it's important for them doing their job to have the trust of the community. And this trust has been shattered by this incident and others. And so it works to everyone's advantage, which is why I'm really in favor of these cameras. I think the cameras are going to help the police officers.
So says Eric Zorn, Tribune columnist. Read him whenever you get a chance. Thank you, Eric. We'll
nice
see you in a week.
Nice to see you. Yeah, I'll see you next
Absolutely.
Monday.
Absolutely. Quick break, then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Next, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder for either part two of our show or the second show. I'm still not sure which. Do you know which one this is?
No. Do we have to reintroduce ourselves? Can't we just say as we were talking?
I think
I am Wendy. Damn glad to meet you.
These name tags aren't for nothing, you know. I spent a lot of time marking these up. Tonight is a special night if you're a fan of the holidays because it's the 50th airing of the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
50th airing?
50 years in a row now.
Okay, because it's aired more than 50 times.
Well, yeah, I guess technically it has. Like on Lifetime, don't they show it constantly?
On Lifetime?
Except Meredith Baxter Burney plays the role of Lucy.
I am not an addict.
And she has an illness of some sort.
Although she would get her money's worth with the nickel psychiatric appointment.
Yes, she would. She would absolutely get
Good
her money's
point.
Worth. I can't speak for you, but to me, when
nothing says Christmas,
isn't it perfect? It's just perfect in every way. And it's so, the animation is so simplistic, but there's just something so magical about it. Now I know today we have ways to tape it and we can watch it whenever we want. But when we were kids, if you missed the Charlie Brown Christmas special, your Christmas was doomed. You weren't going to have a good Christmas.
That's true.
Isn't it? I loved it. When I was a kid, I don't think I missed it at all, like from the time I was 4 or 5 until I was in my teens.
That's what you call appointment television.
Yes. Yes.
Now we've become lazy.
We're very, very lazy.
But lazy, no, maybe just busy.
Well, yeah, you could chalk it up to that. You could. I've said this before, and I think this is true. Part of the appeal of the Peanuts gang and Charlie Brown.
Peanuts?
The Peanuts gang.
All right. Will you stress that better?
Charlie Brown. Is that unlike today, they were the first kids who spoke like adults and talked about adult-type things. Now you can look at South Park. You can look at the kids on The Simpsons, on Family Guy. They all have traits like that, and it really does trace back to the Charlie Brown kids.
Those weren't really adult-like things, were they?
Yeah. What other, like, look back in the 60s. Was any other kid thinking about seeing a psychiatrist?
I guess not.
I mean, almost everything they talk about is so existential.
Who just, was seeing the psychiatrist?
It was usually Charlie Brown.
Well, that's because who was always moving the football? Lucy
was moving the football.
So it was bullying back then.
She was creating her own business.
Yeah, he had low self-esteem because of that.
Well, he's 5 years old, and he only has a C for hair. There's just a little. He doesn't have full-on hair. He's
What's
just got a little.
Up with that? Why were children bald then?
I don't know.
I mean, as babies, yes, but, you know, it's like they were big babies.
Sluggo from Nancy wasn't bald, but
Crew
he just
cut.
Had a little, like a buzz cut.
No, these were bald.
Caillou
is a pansy, and I hate him.
Oh, come on.
If your kid watches Caillou, your kid is going to be in for a rude awakening.
I still like to watch Caillou sometimes on
soothing.
A rainy winter afternoon.
It's very soothing.
Yeah.
It is not soothing. I just want to kill him. I hate Caillou.
Why would you be so upset with Caillou?
Because he has nothing going in the testosterone department.
He's got a cute little hair on the top of his head.
Yeah. He's
just
a
barely.
Whiny little pansy.
There was another bald kid named Henry years ago, a cartoon character. There's something about
Henry.
Cartoon kids not having any hair. I don't understand what the correlation is. I have found this. This was over at yahoo.com. These are fun things that you may not know about the Charlie Brown Christmas special. I would say I've watched it, seriously, about 30 or 35 times. And tonight's
oh,
a one-hour special.
I bet you've watched it more.
Probably more. Probably. Tonight they're doing a one-hour special. They're doing the original, which is a half an hour, but they've also got Kristen Bell doing a before and after on it.
How does she get that gig?
I don't know. I'd love to do that.
You would have been better.
That would have
been
great.
And you're older.
I am older than Kristen Bell.
And so
I'm prettier. I'm prettier than Kristen Bell.
You're much prettier.
You know, it lost a little bit once you could get it on VHS.
Don't you think, Steve?
Yeah.
Don't you think? Because then you could watch it over and over and over.
It's like the Grinch, you know?
Yep.
Used to be the kids, you could only watch it once a year. You had
yep.
to catch it, and then
yep.
nothing
so
special anymore,
no,
Wendy.
I know. That's so true. All right, so these are things, if you knew them, I apologize, but they say on Yahoo that you didn't know them.
Did
so
you know
with
most
that.
Of them?
I knew about a half of them, There were some I didn't know.
Really?
I didn't know this one. Originally, CBS wanted the special to be a one-hour special. It's 25 minutes, but CBS originally thought it was an hour. Bill Melendez is the director of the Charlie Brown Christmas special. He had to talk the network into going to a half-an-hour format because he thought an hour of animation would be too hard on the eyes. Now, today, we're used to seeing a cartoon or an animated feature last an hour and a half, 2 hours. But back then, they thought, you go crazy if you watch a cartoon for an hour.
Yeah, but what did we do every Saturday morning? Back to back to back.
4 hours of
cartoons.
Yeah,
so that's stupid.
But look where we are today.
Caillou's still a pansy.
I don't understand your hatred of Caillou. I'm baffled by that.
I'm not the only one. I'm starting a Facebook page.
The girl who played Sally, that's Charlie Brown's younger sister. Some would say precocious younger sister.
Is that the blonde bozo like hair?
Yeah.
Where it kind of flips up?
Yep.
Okay.
Sally could not read the script for the Charlie Brown Christmas special. She was too young. It says Lee Mendelsohn's neighbor, Lee Mendelsohn was one of the producers, Lee Mendelsohn's neighbor and family friend Kathy Steinberg was 6 years old when she was chosen to play the voice of Charlie Brown's sister, Sally. Steinberg later revealed that she and several other cast members didn't know how to read. They could not read the script.
That was a long recording session. So, Say this.
And I think they couldn't read it because they're cartoons.
I was thinking that at the beginning, but I...
No, that's not why. They were too young. They couldn't read.
Caillou can't read.
But you have got to stop hating Caillou.
That's how about aardvarks? You hate aardvarks, too?
No, like them.
Melendez had to feed the kids the lines one by one.
Yep, boy. That is recording session hell.
Isn't that awful? I never would have thought of that. You probably noticed this about the Charlie Brown Christmas special. There is no laugh track, which was common at the time. It says, while laugh tracks were standard for TV animation back in the 1960s, Charles M. Schulz insisted that the show be produced without a laugh track. The Peanuts creator strongly believed that people didn't need to be told when to laugh, which I don't know if you know this or not, was the same exact system they used for the TV show MASH. Did you know that?
Yeah, but that's because they were worried someone was going to laugh at an inappropriate time in MASH.
Well, they compromised in MASH because the producers didn't want a laugh track and the network wanted one. So they said, when we're in the operating room, no laugh track, but outside of the operating room, you can have a laugh track. That was their compromise.
I'll tell you the truth. I never really noticed the lack of laugh track until you just mentioned it. I mean, I know.
With Charlie Brown?
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I knew that, but now I feel like it's missing.
No, it's so much better because it's... The tone of it is so
gentle.
Look
how excited you got.
I love this special. The tone of it is so gentle,
yeah.
And a laugh track would have, I think, would have gotten in the way, don't you?
Yes, but it just...
No laugh track.
There's the, you know, the... I'm in radio, Bill. I don't like the uncomfortable dead air.
No, I know. I understand.
That's why I talk so much.
The special was barely finished in time for its original airing on December the 9th of 1965. Once the Charlie Brown Christmas was commissioned, Charles M. Schulz, Mendelsohn, and Melendez, that's the producer and the director, had less than 6 months to produce the entire special. It was completed 1 week shy of its national broadcast debut. Now, this is one that is disturbing to me, but I've heard this story before. I knew this one was coming. CBS hated the finished product.
How?
Hated
why?
It.
Huh?
It hadn't aired yet, and they had no idea
WTH.
If it would be a hit. Exactly, WTH. They had no idea the size of a hit that it would be, so they showed it to executives of CBS. This story is so famous. And they were trying to figure out a way to not show it. They thought, this isn't a Christmas special.
I never
this
knew that.
This will never play. It says, when a Charlie Brown Christmas was screened for CBS executives, the general consensus was that it would be a flop. They didn't understand it. They didn't get the voices. They didn't like the music. They didn't understand the pacing. This according to Lee Mendelsohn, the producer. Execs told the creators that it would likely be the last Peanuts special ever, and the network only aired it because it was already on the schedule for the next week.
Boy, do they feel stupid.
How wrong could you possibly be?
We never would have gotten the wah, 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 wah.
Do you know that teacher's name?
No.
I mean, they use that voice for all the parents,
right.
But the one it was usually used for was their teacher, Miss Othmar. That was
only you.
Only
you.
I know.
That's how Jim hears my voice when I talk to him at home.
Really? Just like
wah,
that?
Wah. Yes, honey.
I'll get to it, honey. Wah, 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 wah. All right, your calls and thoughts. We've got more of these. Things you didn't know about the Charlie Brown Christmas special airing tonight, the 50th anniversary. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Did you have Saul's Wheedle on when I wasn't here?
I had some Saul's Wheedle on, yeah.
I'm bothered by that.
Ryan Salzwedel.
I love Salzwedel.
You missed him.
I like a little Salzwedel on the side.
Sure. He made his special Salisbury steaks, Salzwedel Salisbury steaks. They were so
you
tasty.
You were this close.
They were so tasty, Wendy. Tonight is the 50th anniversary of the Charlie Brown Christmas special. It didn't air 50 years ago on this night. It aired a little closer to Christmas 50 years ago. But this will be the 50th showing of it, the 50th year that they've shown it at Christmas time. For years and years and years, it was on CBS. That's who originally had it. But now it's on ABC.
And Kristen Bell is doing it because she plays Anna from Frozen. So she's a hot commodity right now.
I guess.
That's what a texter
still
said.
A little bitter. It should have been me and Caillou.
Oh, speaking of which, can I just...
Sure.
Susie's been on hold here. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the Caillou Haters Club.
That's nice.
Well, it's not... This is funny. I have two little grandchildren that are now 4 and 6. The older one just turned 6. But for a couple of years, my daughter and son-in-law forbid us to let them watch Caillou. They hated that show. They said all he does is whine. It's not the show that they let them watch at home, and I was never able to let them watch it at my house.
This is terrible.
So I agree with you. I mean, you know, I've watched it. He's whiny. He just, there's something about him. And it must turn off other kids, you know, parents in their 30s with their little kids. Because
he has got nothing going on.
We're all with you. We're all with you, Wendy. Yeah.
I can't understand
Thank you,
this.
Susie.
Caillou is French for don't hate me. Did you know that?
I don't care.
It is.
Sign me up for the Caillou page. I'm going to start a Facebook page. I hate Caillou.
Oh.
I'm going to call it... Never mind. My 3-year-old grandson's speech therapist instructed us to avoid this show. It does not promote speaking skills.
I never saw
What about Rosie? She gets more stuff than I do.
All right. There's a whiny. There's a slight whiny twitch.
This is like the people who say, I never listen to you, but they can tell you what to do every day. I mean, you seem to know a lot about Caillou.
I got stuck watching it when it must have been Michael when he was growing up, and I said, no more.
No more Caillou.
Even the Teletubbies are better.
Ugh. That says a lot.
That was like an acid trip. Caillou is like, right. You know, right. Oh, God, what not to be.
The iconic Peanuts theme, the song that Kevin just played a little while ago. That's the iconic Peanuts theme. I'm thinking of Christmas Time is Here. I'm thinking of that one, but yours is the right one. Originally written by Vince Guaraldi for a documentary. It says one of the highlights of the Charlie Brown Christmas is the soundtrack performed by jazz composer Vince Guaraldi. In 1963, Mendelssohn worked with Guaraldi on a documentary about Charles Schulz and Charlie Brown. That project never sold, and that music was later transformed to the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Is it called Linus and Lucy?
Yeah, it is.
Right. Best very music
good.
Ever.
I mean, very good.
I'll only say this because you know so much more about it, so you're probably right.
Are you trying to throw down? Go ahead.
No, I'm not, but I always thought it was Guaraldi.
You know, in all honesty, I've heard it pronounced both ways. I'm
That's
sure
what
one
people
way,
say when they say it wrong.
I'm sure Vince Guaraldi says it the correct way, but I have heard as many people say Guaraldi as Guaraldi.
No, I'd heard Vince A. Guaraldi.
Vince A. Guaraldi. Shermie has only one line in the entire special. Do you know what it is?
You were going to say one leg.
One leg.
Or one lung.
Draw him another one.
Shermie has one line in the entire special, and that seems about right because Shermie's not a big marquee star for the Peanuts.
His one line is Caillou, and his thumb is down.
You have got to stop hating Caillou. Shermie says, every Christmas it's the same. I always end up playing a shepherd. I think that's one of the best lines in the whole show. Can I tell you what my favorite moment is of the Charlie Brown Christmas special?
Do we have a choice?
As soon as... No. I have to say this.
Don't ask, just tell us.
I love the part where Schroeder's playing the piano and all the kids are dancing, and there's one kid doing what I call the spaz dance, where he's just moving his head one way, then he moves his head the other way.
Right.
That kid's the best. I don't know who that kid is. I don't know where he came from.
So many actors can do so much with so little, Bill. You know, you just give Shermie one line.
Well, you say so many actors. You know, De Niro was up for that role of the kid with the spaz dance, and he didn't get it.
Didn't they cut that scene out, some of Schroeder out? When they shorten the show a little bit?
Oh, maybe.
I think it's not in every version.
It's possible, because to add a couple of commercial elements, I know they cut a couple minutes out a few years ago. One more quick thing. Coke was the original sponsor of the Charlie Brown Christmas special 50 years ago.
Coca-Cola,
not cocaine. And they had, originally, there were two references to Coca-Cola in the special that have since been pulled out. It says, despite its anti-commercialism message, the first version of the Charlie Brown Christmas special boasted two Coca-Cola references. Coke's sponsorship was mentioned in the closing credits, and there was even product placement in the opening sequence when Snoopy hurled Linus head-on into a sign advertising Coca-Cola. That's out of it now. They don't show that part of it anymore.
They shouldn't edit that out. Here, listen.
Vince Guaraldi.
That's how you say
Vince
it.
Vince Guaraldi.
Yep.
Vince right. Guaraldi.
And is that a robot? Who's who is that?
What Vince Shermie did Guaraldi? When he got older.
This is
he was an online pronouncer.
Guys, I just found the most helpful tool for broadcasters.
What is it?
It's called pronouncenames.com.
I like to think that I'm the most helpful tool for broadcasters.
Vince Guaraldi?
You're the most helpful tool on the radio.
Thank you. That's better.
So was that pieced together, obviously, because...
Vince Guaraldi?
No, they just keep saying it.
I don't know how much you spent for that CD, but you wasted your money.
Right, there's not even any piano on it.
You should hear the flip side.
I hear Adele shaking right now. Oh, no, that's going to outsell my CD. Oh, no.
Do we have the correct pronunciation of your name?
Wow.
That's Jose Feliciano.
I only punch in Caillou.
See how they say Caillou?
I can't do it this
Stop
quickly.
Stop hating him. Why
he
do you hate
sucks.
Him? Oh, that's awful.
Caillou should die.
That's, oh.
I know that's really
that's
something.
As wrong as wrong can be. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. And Wendy, you are, by your own admission, just a little bit geeked out, correct?
Yeah, I want to start by saying go to these albums. You can do CD or vinyl. Look at the liner notes, the sleeve, Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed by the Rolling Stones. Abbey Road by a little band called the Beatles and mm-hmm. Let It Be. Slow Hand by Eric Clapton. And you know what you're going to see?
What's that?
You're going to see this guy's name on it. Engineered by Glyn Johns or mixed by Glyn Johns, produced by Glyn Johns, and we're talking to Glyn Johns. Hi, Glyn.
Hi, how you doing?
We're pretty excited to talk to you about the new book, Sound Man. We introduced you with Rock and Roll from Led Zeppelin. You recorded one of the greatest drummers in the world, according to me, John Bonham, with what, a couple of microphones?
With three, actually. Yeah.
Three?
Yes. Yes, and I agree with you. He certainly was one of the greatest drummers ever.
Absolutely. And it looks like some of the greats that you worked with are speaking pretty highly of your book. You've got Paul McCartney saying some great things about Sound Man, Eric Clapton, Pete Townsend. What was it like working with these legends?
Well, it was quite wonderful. I consider myself to be extremely fortunate to have been in the same room with any of them and watch them create the most amazing music.
Was there one, it's an incredible roster, of course, Glyn, of the people that you've worked with, but were there any standouts among this Hall of Fame group? Did anybody really just blow you away among those great, great talents?
To be honest with you, nearly everybody I've ever worked with, I felt very strongly about. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bothered working with them. The list is too long to go through. But some of the people you just mentioned, Pete Townsend, for example, is the most extraordinary talent, the most amazing songwriter, as well as being a great guitar player, and has the most extraordinary energy of perhaps anybody I've ever worked with. Mick and Keith, the way they created songs in the studio was fascinating to watch, although sometimes a little bit laborious, but the end results were all quite stunning. Led Zeppelin were quite extraordinary in as much as they literally turned rock and roll as I knew it in 1969, or 68, I think it was actually, late 68, right on its head, which was not an easy task, I don't think, considering what had preceded it immediately. So I could go on and on and on. The Eagles were completely wonderful to work with also, because they had...
Because they were high all the time and easy to get along with, weren't they?
No, actually, they weren't high all the time, funny enough. The Eagles nearly everybody I worked with was high during the 60s, that's for sure. not everybody, but almost everybody, and I suppose that was the sort of norm. With the exception of me, I was boringly straight as a die.
Yeah, but you started out in the world of music. Didn't you have your own band for a while?
Well, I was in a band, yes. I was a singer in a band for a while, and just like so many other kids, never with any intention of having music as a profession.
You didn't really? I have a 16-year-old son, and the reason I don't have the book here is we got Soundman in paperback, Lynn John's Soundman, which is available now in paperback, and he stole it from me. My husband bought it in hardcover, and he would not give it to me. So I just want you to tell me about it, and then I have to weasel it away from them and read it over the holiday break.
Well, I do. I do hope you enjoy it. The purpose of writing the book was really just to talk about the change in the industry since the late 50s until now, which is how long I've been in it, and to talk about some of the amazingly colourful characters that I've come across during the 50 or 60 years that I've been involved. And it's not an autobiography at all. It's a memoir. And it's hopefully informative and a little amusing here and there with any luck.
All right. What about Yoko Ono? Do you do an impression of her that we can hear?
That's very good. No, I don't think I could stretch to that.
You know, in a way, Glenn, we're happy to hear that you can't, because it hurts the ears sometimes.
Yeah. That might be the best question I've been asked. That's fabulous. No, I'll leave everyone's imagination to that one.
Interesting story with Bob Dylan. I named my second son Dylan because of Bob Dylan. And you had an interesting run-in at the airport. Briefly, what he wanted you.
Yes, I was introduced to him at an airport by Yal Munner, who is the owner and editor of Rolling Stone. And I had just finished the Let It Be album with the Beatles, and my reputation had preceded me prior to that because I'd worked with the Rolling Stones for so many years. So Mr. Dylan was very well aware of who I'd been working with, evidently, and some of the records that I'd made. And he said to me that he'd always wanted to make a record with both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And he asked me if I could help facilitate that. Pretty astonishing idea, really. So I went back to England and did ring everybody in each of the two bands, and obviously it didn't come to pass because Paul McCartney from the Beatles and Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones didn't want to have anything to do with the idea.
Really?
Which I don't blame them for in the least. It would have probably been fairly odd. But it would have been an interesting challenge to do, I must say.
We always hear, Glenn, about the British invasion and, you know, the amount of fantastic music that was a result of it. But what were they doing differently? Why were we so overcome with a new sound from England? What was going on there, do you think?
Oh, to be honest with you, I really can't answer that question. You know, we were all influenced by America.
Were you, yeah?
Wow.
Oh, absolutely, of course. We were influenced by, initially, rock and roll that came out of America, which was pretty white.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in parallel to that, a lot of people of my age were listening to the blues and were being educated about the blues, which we then took and put it in a melting pot, and it came out the other end as the British invasion.
Well, definitely.
We were all influenced by Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry and, everything that was going on in America. There was very little, at the time of the revolution in America with Elvis and everything, there was very little coming out of England that was worth anything, really.
Well, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, wasn't the Beatles taking their name to kind of pay homage to them by the Beatles and then changed it more to a pun, like the Beat instead of the Bugs?
I've never heard that before, but it's entirely possible, I'm sure, yes. I mean, everybody loved Buddy Holly. I mean, I didn't know a single soul. I mean, we all just waited for the next rock and roll record to come out of America when we were in our teens. And it's very interesting that, in fact, if you look at it, a lot of the stuff in the early 60s that was successful from England was based really on the blues.
Well, Howlin' Wolf, of course, you know, Eric Clapton, Robert Johnson, all these old blues greats really inspired Eric.
We're talking with Glyn Johns, soundman extraordinaire. His book, Sound Man, available right now, chronicling all the great performers he's worked with over the years. Glyn, my guess is it got pretty intense inside those studios at times. What's the most intense it ever got that you remember?
Oh, God.
No, I'm not going there.
No?
No.
You can tell us. Most of us are adults.
Very intense from my perspective. It was, you know, I witnessed the odd interesting situation. But you know what? Being a producer and engineer is rather like being a doctor. You witness stuff that you're... But it's part of the sort of ethics of the job that you don't talk about it.
All right.
I never have.
All right. That's fair.
All right. Well, it's pretty exciting. The Who, the Kinks, Small Faces. I mean, you know what? You should write a book that who you haven't produced or worked with.
Well, I've decided, having written the one, I don't think I should be bothering with another. As much as I enjoyed the process, I don't really have anything else to say. I must say it's all in there.
Glyn, what do you think of the state of the art now? Are you happy with the way music is sounding now?
No, I'm not at all.
No?
I think it's really disappointing. But then I'm 73 years old. I suppose it's only to be expected. I don't think my parents particularly liked the sound of what was going on when I was a teenager. I think that I could bore you to death, but I do think that the digital age that we live in has decreased the quality of what we listen to now immensely, and I mourn the passing of analog recording as much as anything, really.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really different, even just working in radio, learning how to edit things with reel-to-reel and the splicing tape and the razor blades, and now everything's done digitally. You know, I grew up the old-school way where you really had to have a feel for it and learn it, and now, like, any kid can just go on a computer program and figure out how to edit with digital editing.
Well, I suppose in some ways that's a pretty good thing, really. I mean, if it opens up the facility to a lot of people who wouldn't normally have the opportunity, I think that's great. And clearly, the fact that you can now make a record in your bedroom without it costing you several $100,000, I think that's wonderful. I don't have any complaint about that at all. I do think, however, that the quality of songwriting now isn't quite what it used to be. But more than anything, the skill of recording a bunch of people live seems to have disappeared completely. And to me, the best way to capture the performance of a piece of music should be, that's played by more than one person, should be with everybody reacting off each other. Music is so much an emotion when it's performed, mm-hmm. and also when it's perceived by the listener. But that emotive content is missing so much now because people don't interact with each other when they record, because they're recording one instrument at a time.
Yeah.
But is there anyone working today, Glyn, that you'd say to yourself, boy, I'd love to get in and mix or produce for that person or that group?
Oh, there's a lot.
Yeah?
Absolutely. But I don't know that any of the contemporary artists would come into that category, although I'd be very interested to... Let's put it this way, I've always got my ear to the ground, and I haven't stopped working yet, and
good.
I have no intention that they'll carry me out of a control room feet first, I expect.
And you've done work with Ryan Adams recently. He's very talented.
Yeah.
Oh, he's incredibly talented. Extraordinary talent. A complete gem of a songwriter and singer, and actually a fine musician. He was wonderful to work with. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. I'm just now working with Eric Clapton. I'm making an album with Eric for the first time in 40 years.
Wow.
And the last record we made was an album called Slow Hand in the early 70s. And, and we decided to get back together and make another record.
Well, congratulations on that and your induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2012, long overdue.
Well, thank you so much.
I have to get your Soundman book out of the clutches of my 16-year-old, who I love because he's into Del Shannon and Buddy Holly and Lou Reed and Donovan and Elmore James, and he, a 16-year-old telling me that, you know, Fleetwood Mac really didn't matter after Peter Green left. It's just so fun to hear a 16-year-old.
Wow, that's amazing. Good on him. Does he have a turntable?
He does. In fact, we just went to Val's Halla record store in Oak Park for Small Business Saturday, and I had to lend him $150 to buy records. Including a new release from
the
Kinks.
You're a lucky lady to have such an informed young man.
Well, the book is great. And it's really a pleasure to talk to you. And please keep in touch and good luck with working with the man with the slow hand, Eric Clapton.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn. Great to last chance on that Yoko Ono impression.
Nice to talk.
Last chance on the Yoko Ono impression. All right, next time. We'll do it next time. Thank you, Glenn.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much. His name is Glenn Johns, and he's worked with them all. The Clash, one of my favorites, Linda Ronstadt, he worked with.
You look at the list, and you say to yourself, that's impossible that one guy could have reached all those people, but he did. Wow.
The book is called Sound Man, and it's available everywhere. You can also go to his website and find out some interesting things, bits and pieces, glennjohns.com. Thank you for indulging me. I love the rock and roll.
Absolutely. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, a little bit of behind the scenes. Moments ago, we had Glenn Johns on. This is one of the greatest rock and roll producers and engineers of all time. He's worked with everybody who's ever been anybody in music.
And back with Clapton after the Slow Hand album, he's working with them again.
Right. New album called Slower Hand will be out in stores in a year. So you asked him a question about Yoko Ono. Can you please restate the question?
I asked if we could, you know, I hear you do an impression of Yoko Ono. Can we hear it?
Right. And he even says it on the book's back cover.
Well, that's why I asked him.
Right. But he just laughed a lot.
That's not Glenn Johns doing Yoko. That's Yoko doing Yoko.
Right, that's Yoko doing Yoko.
Yeah, it says right on the back of the book that, you know, he recalls his impressions of John and Yoko during the Let It Be sessions. So why wouldn't he answer me?
Wait, can you read that sentence again?
He
recalls his impressions.
He recalls, this is on the back of Glenn Johns, Sound Man.
Yeah.
He recalls his impressions of John and Yoko during the Let It Be sessions.
He didn't do impressions.
No. Oh, I get it now. Well, good. I'm glad I accidentally asked him that. See, you just read things. All right, well, good. Best question he's ever been asked.
That's what he said.
Follow me. Don't use your brain.
What if he had said, I can't believe anyone knew about that, and then he did it?
That would
have been
great.
Impressive?
But it means something more that he didn't do it. It really does, because it must be nasty.
Right. Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I read that wrong.
No,
sorry, I did not have my glasses on.
That word impressions means a million things. Oh. You can't be held responsible.
Oh, that's his impressions of John and Yoko. Okay. Well, it could be taken both ways.
I wonder if that's why he laughed hysterically. Did
Maybe.
He know that's how you were taking it?
No,
or?
I don't think so. But he'd laugh even harder if he knew how stupid I was. Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Does he do an impression of Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
In harmony.
I would like to hear it.
Get him back on, Kevin.
I'll tell you, when I think I am in danger,
right.
If I just let it rip.
Then we're all in trouble.
Well, I'm not letting that rip.
All right.
All right. Thank you for pointing that out.
I wondered
why you wanted me so badly to read this on the air. Now I understand
now
why.
Get it.
Yeah,
all right.
I get
a
it.
Quick break, maybe a long break. We'll see how long the break goes. And then news with Steve. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill F. and the Caillou hating Wendy Snyder.
You know, I was actually sent something that I would like to share.
What is it?
Just the 10
In
reasons.
Defense?
No. No one, not one person has defended Caillou.
No, they're all on, every text that I saw was on your side. They all want, they want Caillou put to sleep. You shouldn't put a kid to sleep.
That's not.
What's wrong with people?
I said I wanted him dead, but that.
That's awful.
Yeah, parents can't stand the song, it's Caillou in general, but the theme song says the word Caillou 14,356 times. And it's sung by him, Caillou.
That might be
Caillou.
An exaggeration. For people who don't know, this was a kids' TV show. It's still, I don't even know
it's
if it's
Canadian.
Still on. It is
it's
Canadian
still on.
In nature.
It's stupid. It should be stopped. I'm starting a Facebook. I'm doing a GoFundMe page.
I've never seen you, with the exception of dimes, I've never seen you so upset about anything.
Don't make me go home again.
All right.
An early title sequence to the show used to feature Caillou throwing a temper tantrum. But that happens every episode.
Yeah. It is a common occurrence on the Caillou show. He seems to need some sort of therapy.
That face. He just makes a pouty face. You know, do you ever see these? They're like little greeting cards. There's, I don't know what they're called. Okay. You see them on Facebook a lot.
Yeah.
It's like a little, you know, why does happy hour have to be limited to just an hour? They're like little sayings. And,
yeah.
This one was, when I'm having a rough day with the kids, I like to remind myself that at least I'm not Caillou's mom.
Wow. I didn't know there was this universal hatred for this kid.
Yeah, how old is Caillou? He's a pretty young pup, right?
He seems to be around 8.
He's younger than that.
He's not even 8?
No.
Why is Caillou bald? Lots of people think it's because the show is based on a kid with cancer. No. The creators did not give him hair because in the original books, he was at an age where many kids don't have hair. Caillou is basically a hairless, ageless tyrant who is never happy with anything and who was sent here to turn your kids into weak brats.
Was this the pitch to the network that they made to sell the show?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know how old he is.
I don't think you put an age on him.
Four. He's 4 years old. I'm told it's in the
who
theme
just told
song.
You that?
Ryan Burrow, who brings his guitar in and sometimes sings the theme.
Oh, my God.
Four. U.S. years or Canadian years, Steve?
It's metric years.
Metric years?
Right.
All right.
Kilo years.
About 4.5 American.
I think so.
That's the translation.
All right. Well, please.
Is he older than Little Bear?
Little Bear was sweet.
Very gentle.
I'm okay with sweet.
Right.
But not a whiny, tempered tantrum throwing. God, I'm describing myself. Maybe that's why I don't like Caillou.
I think we just learned a lot just now in the last 5 seconds.
I think maybe you're right. I had some prank gifts, and I cannot find them. It is Cyber Monday, so
yes.
There are lots of deals out there.
Right.
Although I have a bit of a problem with my mortgage.
Because why?
I have an escrow shortage, so I have to pay the difference, and you told me to ask them if there are any Cyber Monday discounts.
Call your bank and say, look, I'm saving money everywhere I go today. Let's work something out for Cyber Monday. I'm sure they'd accommodate you.
They hung up on me.
Did they hang up on you?
When I asked that question. Have you ordered anything for...
I've never bought anything on a Cyber Monday.
Do you hate the lines? Is that it? You don't like the lines?
Yeah, too long. The lines are too long, Steve.
I'm serious. Do you know how much you can save?
Yeah.
Average of 26%.
Is that what they're saying?
It's
huge. The average deal is, right?
Really?
I always feel like if they're giving me that good of a deal.
Why don't they do that year round?
That they're still ripping me off somehow. So.
I think there's something to that.
So I feel better paying full price.
I got to tell you, this is just a little insight into my Caillou-ness.
Yeah.
Not really at all. I wanted this wallet, and it was like $100 and some, and I thought, if I get this wallet, I'm not going to have any money to put in it.
Oh, good point, yeah.
So I just kind of wanted it and filed it away, and then for a goof yesterday, I was Googling it, because that's what I like to do.
To see if it's still in existence?
And it's $47. So I waited a year. It's now $47. I still want it. So I bought it.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. But it just
shows that sometimes patience is the key, right?
Yeah, but it also shows that I have an addiction, because you get so many, is it dopamine, I think? You get these emotions and these endorphins when you shop and when you buy something.
Yep.
And
dopamines. Why do you think they call it dope amines? Remember that ad campaign?
Yes, I do. I do. It was about drugs. Why do you think they call
drugs?
It dope?
Right, amines.
And then
that was the part that they cut out.
Was that the fried egg one too?
Yeah. These are your brains on dopamines. No, on drugs, right? Exactly. The fried eggs one?
I like the dopamines.
These are eggs. These are your eggs on drugs.
Oh, I'm having a hot flash. Anyway, so if you go on, like, don't laugh at me. I'm like, literally, my head is sweating. I'm a piece of work.
Oh, no.
If you go on to, like, Amazon or wherever.
Kevin, can you bring in some estrogen, please, for Wendy? And I'll take some, too. Just a little bit.
You could just give me some of yours.
All right, here. It's mine. I'm not using them. Okay.
I'm really sweating. Do you see my head sweating?
I know. It's like a sauna.
Hot flashes suck. Can I just tell you that? It's like all of a sudden, you know, when you say something stupid and you feel embarrassed and blood rushes to your head.
Like
which
what?
Anything.
Yoko Ono impression? Is that what's
causing
this?
Oh, no. God, that's nothing. Right. This is like all of a sudden my head just starts sweating.
Oh, no. Well, you need a sweatband. You don't need a wallet.
Where's Mike you Reno bought... from Loverboy when you need him?
I know. You bought the wrong gear.
All right, listen. I'm trying to be serious here.
Go ahead.
When you go online, especially on Cyber Monday, you go to various websites. You Google whatever it is you want.
Right.
You put it in your cart.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, go have a sandwich or
you
something.
You don't buy it.
No, you just leave it in your cart. And then you kind of forget that you didn't purchase it,
right?
And your feelings of satisfaction are there. You do kind of wonder why it never shows up at your house.
There's that. You don't actually get the item,
but
some of the satisfaction of kind of buying it is
yeah
there.
And sometimes you don't even need what you buy. It's just like if you've there are some. I need a new wallet. My zipper broke on my wallet that I got at Target,
right,
which kind of looks like the $100 one. But I went to Target.
Did you buy one that just looked like it to save the money? Yeah.
It was like $12.99. Big difference.
That is a big difference. It is.
And now it's on sale. But if you, it's just sometimes the thrill of finding a good deal.
Of course.
So if you go and put it in your cart, but then you don't check out.
I'm not kidding. Seriously, I think that's genius.
It really kind of takes away that urge of purchasing something.
Right. Right, without having to spend the money. But then, like you pointed out, there's a little drawback in that then they don't send it to you.
Yeah, that's why your birthday present's late.
That's all right. I'm going to have more birthdays. I got a lot more birthdays ahead. Don't worry about it.
All right,
I
got to hose myself down. Can we take a quick break?
Yeah.
I am just sweating.
I can see.
I know.
That. Wow.
I don't know
You'll
what it is.
You'll be fine.
Is it hot in here?
Yes. Whew, is it hot in here? No.
It really isn't.
It's not even a little bit hot in here. No. I'm worried about you.
From my boobs up, I am just sweating.
Right. Is the webcam working, Kevin? We're getting a lot more hits all of a sudden.
Did you say hits?
Hits.
Oh.
We'll take a little break. We'll towel off, and then we'll be back. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Weather in the first 5 minutes. Watch Chicago.
Yeah, it's hot in here.
There is a hot front moving on your side of the studio. Watch Chicago's first weather report at 10 p.m. with Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN TV News at 10.
All right, somebody has texted us. I had a bit of a hot flash at my hole. It was like the flop sweat in broadcast news.
That's
with Albert
like.
Brooks. It's just all of a sudden.
Your head got all wet.
Bad. Was it?
Yeah.
Oh. It says hot flashes, all non-females run for your lives. And
you don't get dangerous during a hot flash, do you?
No, I just get hot.
Yep.
And then, Wendy, I'm in the same place, and Bill's doing a pretty good job of tiptoeing around it. He'll learn the hard way.
You had one of these a couple of weeks ago, and I heated up a ham and cheese sandwich on your forehead. Remember? You got mad at me, but boy, that was a tasty sandwich.
All right. And again, if you want to just buy something on Cyber Monday but not waste money, just put it in your cart.
Right.
And then close out the window. Although someone has pointed out that now the stores actually will email you back
say,
hey, this is in your cart. Did you still want it? But just say no. Just don't answer.
Right. You still get the same satisfaction.
And let's give away something because it is Cyber Monday.
All right.
How about a black and red artificial desktop holiday tree? It has little white mini lights, and it is courtesy of Tree Time. With over 200 beautiful, realistic artificial Christmas trees and thousands of unique ornaments and decorations, just visit Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington or treetime.com. We have a black and red tabletop artificial holiday tree with white mini lights, courtesy of Tree Time. Let's do caller number one.
Caller number one.
I'm doing number one. I'm going to give Kevin a break
right now.
312-981-7200. First caller, bing, bang, boom,
done. That's how fast it happens.
Now I can fan myself.
A friend of ours, a friend of the show, a friend of yours and mine, was chronicled on national television a couple of days ago. You want to guess who it is? You want to even take a shot?
A friend of ours.
Now, I say friend. I don't know that you've ever met him. Oh, no. I think you have met him. I have not. But we've had him as a guest on the show at least twice, maybe three times.
Okay, I met him and you didn't, so you were on vacation?
I'm trying to think of why you met him and I didn't. I think you went somewhere and he happened to be there or something. I can't remember the circumstance by which you met him. But sometime within the last year, and we had him on the show a couple of weeks ago for a return visit.
Oh, Tommy Davidson.
It's not Tommy Davidson.
Congratulations to Anna from Mount Prospect. Was it Anna from Mount Prospect?
No, it was not. That's a great guess.
Because she just scored the Tree Time Black and Red Desktop Holiday Tree, courtesy of Tree Time. Mini lights, artificial desktop holiday tree. It's really cute. Congrats.
I'll fill you in on the details. All right, here's a hint. On HBO, they've got this show called Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, and I watch it from time to time. And our friend was chronicled on the last episode.
Graham Mulvey.
It was not Graham Mulvey.
No, because you know him.
That's my best friend in the whole world.
How's that going?
Really good. Thanksgiving was a blast.
Did you see him?
Yeah. We went to...
Did he see you?
We went to his Nana's house. Nana Mulvey. She made a buttermilk biscuit. Man, are they good. Grant and I had a buttermilk biscuit tasting contest.
Okay, so Nana Mulvey's...
Butternut Bilskits, she called them, in salute to me.
I've missed you. You know that?
The heat generating from your hot flash.
I know,
no,
it's over. It's passing.
All right.
Now this is just, you're making me laugh so hard. All right.
So our friend, not Grant Mulvey, was chronicled for 20 minutes on this show, Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. Should I tell you who it is?
No, I need a better hint.
He has something to do with, he's had something to do with Chicago sports, but also nationally. Whatever sport he's involved in has been a national thing, but we've taken a special kind of a liking to him for something that goes on locally with our sports. Does that help or hurt? I bet my clue made it even harder.
I have no idea.
That was the worst
clue
ever.
Is it someone who's on the air with us in 5 minutes?
No. Nope. How about this for a clue? If something was wrong with you, you could visit him, but he wouldn't help you.
Oh, Doc Emrick. Thank you.
Doc Emrick was chronicled on Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, and you know what I found out about him? And this, I've heard him do hockey games for years and years and years, and I never would have guessed this in a million years. When Doc Emrick calls a hockey game, and they had other guys in the profession, like they had Al Michaels, who's one of the best football commentators, but he's also done some hockey. And even Al Michaels said, anytime they call me to do a hockey game, I say to myself, why wouldn't you get Doc Emrick? He's the best at hockey. Get Doc Emrick.
He is fantastic.
Boy, is he good. He's and it's just, you know, it's off the top of his head, and it's like poetry when he talks.
It is.
So good. So Doc Emrick, when he's calling the games, when he's calling a hockey game, I always envisioned him up in the booth watching the hockey game, because that would make sense, right?
Is he under the ice?
No, he's not under the ice. He would suffocate.
Is he on the bench?
No, he wouldn't be able to see. He's in the booth, but he's watching. They've got this monitor for him that's like a close-up of the action. So he's not physically watching the game. He's just watching this monitor with a big close-up of wherever the puck is, which I guess makes more sense, right?
No.
Doesn't it?
No. Because you want to see the whole thing. You want to see who has the puck, who's coming up, who is being blocked.
Yeah,
you can't just
so.
Follow the puck.
Well, here's what he said. He said he doesn't, because they were saying how, you know, there's constant substitutions and there's so much action going on. And he said he has schooled himself to kind of learn the way that guys move. So he doesn't have to see their names or their numbers. He can just tell by their body motion who's who on the ice. That's why it comes to him so quickly. It was really cool to see.
That's pretty amazing. And, I mean, you can tell, like, you know, you watch Patrick Kane doing the handling.
The spinoramas.
Oh, my God. It's like, you know, there's a disco ball up
right.
there, and he'll spin around and do a pass.
Right.
It's like he's one of the Temptations on the right. ice. And then you got Schauser with his porno stash that he had for a while.
Yep.
Are they all shaving tomorrow? Because December 1st?
I don't know if all of them are. I think the plan is for most of them, too.
But Shaw is just pretty, you know, his handling isn't as great
right.
as Patrick Kane, and he's just straight on for
right.
the money. And there is a difference that even I notice.
Yeah.
So obviously he watches every team.
That's what he's saying.
It's not just the Hawks, though.
No,
it's
he's got to do it with every team in the NHL.
That's
right.
amazing.
I don't know how he does it. And guess who in broadcasting is the guy that he has patterned himself after? This is crazy. I never would have guessed this.
Do I even know who the guy is?
Yeah, but you would never guess this.
Who?
Mr. Rogers. That's been the biggest influence on Doc Emmerich, Mr. Rogers.
Spiked eggnog?
No, I played it.
Mr. Rogers?
Fred Rogers. I had to go back because they talked to him about, because a lot of times he wears like a cardigan, like Fred Rogers, and his easygoing demeanor is just based on Fred Rogers. So they established the fact that Doc Emmerich is so inspired by Fred Rogers, the most gentle man in history. And then they ask him the question, what do you think about hockey fights? And he goes, oh, it's great. You got to have more fights in hockey. I love the hockey fights.
There's one of these times where I don't know if I should believe you or
true.
Not.
Everything I said is true.
Yeah, you say that, but I don't.
No, it's all true.
Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers.
Yeah, Fred Rogers. And they showed a clip of Fred Rogers because Doc Emmerich just idolizes this guy. He loves Fred Rogers. He just thinks he's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
What did he say about Mr. McFeely?
Not a fan. Can't stand him. Hates him.
Too speedy.
Yeah. Way too quick on the draw.
Well, that's fascinating. I'll have to look for that online.
Watch it, because they rerun it. HBO runs it all the time. It's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. And everybody who was on there was just talking him up, saying, this is a guy who just paints the perfect picture for hockey. And it is. It's the hardest game to call, because it's just so fast. There's no downtime at all.
It is poetry. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's scripted, but it can't be scripted because you couldn't script what's going to happen.
It's instantaneous.
That's
like in baseball,
amazing.
You have all kinds of time to react. There's like you could go see a movie sometimes in between pitches, but not in hockey.
Hates
Mr. McFeely.
You know
how you are with Caillou? That's his Mr. McFeely.
Good to know.
Yep.
I love Mike Emmerich.
That's
really
his real
great.
Name. Yeah, and they said the only person, now they can add you to the list, everyone calls him Doc, no matter where he is, except his wife calls him Mike. And now you.
Well, he's going to hear this because he listens to WGN streaming all the time. Yeah. Fred Rogers, really?
I'm not making that up.
All right.
Ask him next time we have Mike.
I will.
A quick break, more show ahead, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Did you say you talked to Doc Emmerich?
Yeah, I sent him a text. I said, hey, we're talking about you. And he said, "Is Mr. Rogers, it comes from a thing that Fred Rogers gave a speech in 1997 at the Emmys.
Yeah.
Asking everyone to think 10 seconds about everyone who helped their careers.
Yeah.
And so he's writing these letters to people. Did you say that, Bill? I'm sorry.
I did not say that part,
yeah.
No.
So he's writing snail mail letters to people who have had a positive influence on his career. He says he's got about 200 to go, only Doc Emmerich would come up with more than 200 people, I think. You know?
God, you know, everybody's so much nicer than us.
Yes.
Well, that's true.
Yes. No argument from me.
Including our next guest.
Charles Peanut Tillman joins us right now. We had him in the studio about a year ago. Nice, nice guy, incredible football player, and the author of a new book called The Middle School Rules of Charles Peanut Tillman. How are you, Charles? Everything good?
Everything is well. How you guys doing?
Excellent.
And lady and gal, how are you doing?
We're doing really good today. I was looking at this. I didn't realize how many times you moved. Your father's in the military, United States Army, and you went to 11 different schools?
Yeah, 11 different schools. It was fun, though. I don't know. If I could do it all over again, I would do it the exact same way. I had a blast moving around, and it was an adventure, and I thought every kid moved around. You know, I thought it was weird
right.
that you would stay in one place. I thought you were the weird one.
Yeah, like, I was, but was not just, for that reason.
Everyone did that. You know, all my friends, we'd move every 2 or 3 years. They'd go somewhere else, I'd go somewhere else. To me, that was my normal.
Yeah, but what about the adjustments? I mean, you know, how old were you? Because that's a volatile time, you know, that you have to make new friends and then you just get hooked up with somebody and then you got to move along.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was born into it. My dad was in the military before I was born. So I remember being in Germany and, like when I was, like, four, came to Chicago, went to school on the south side, went to Horseman on 8th and Jeffrey, and then moved again and went to kindergarten in Junction City, Kansas, then moved to another school in Kansas, and then from there we went to Ohio, back to Germany, to California. Like, it just was, I don't know, I had a blast. It was fun, and, you know, the adjustments are easy. I just, if you don't, you know, I have my dad's personality, so we're a warm, bubbly people, so I made friends fairly easy.
Charles, were you traded for other students when you went from city to city?
No, I wasn't trained or anything like that.
Do you think, though, that because you're so good at sports, did that help you kind of adapt to your new surroundings a little bit?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's always fellows in the yard that want to play basketball, football, soccer. You know, soccer was introduced to me when I lived in Germany. And that was, you know, I grew up around the time, and I'm sure you guys did too, where I didn't have the internet or computers or anything like that, so we had to make our fun.
Sure.
Like, we made games, and we were inventive, and, you know, we got our MacGyver on, and we just would find, we would find ways to get into good trouble, sometimes bad trouble, but, you know, we were always outside doing things, using our creative minds to challenge ourselves, to just occupy time, and it was a blast. So much fun.
Don't you think maybe, though, that kids today, even though technology has taken such great leaps of ahead, maybe that's working against kids because they're not forced to use their imaginations now?
Yeah, I would see that. You know, I see it with my kids, and I'm guilty just like most parents, where you just kind of want the kids to be quiet, so you give an iPad or turn the TV on so you can actually get some work done or something accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time I got fed up with my kids just watching too much TV or playing with an iPad. So it's like, look, turn everything off. No more electronics. It's like, what are we supposed to do? Use your brain. Find something to do. And my son just instantly created and made up this own game and started playing with his little toys and his cars, and you know, made a ramp and just did all types of stuff that kids are supposed to do. So I think too, it's also up to the parents to limit their kids on the amount of time they have with their electronics.
Yeah, I'm pretty guilty of that, although they're older now, but I'm telling you, it was a lifesaver when you're waiting at a doctor's office, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. I still do that.
You got to.
I'll do that.
All right, we're talking to Charles Peanut Tillman, and the book is called The Middle School Rules of Charles Peanut Tillman. And it's a story about your relocation and your readjustment to life, but it's also some good inspiration for other kids as well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't always make the best choices or the right decisions as a child. And, you know, I think as an athlete, celebrity, you know, we have this platform that kids, they look up to us, right? They wore our jerseys. They idolize athletes. Well, you know, I wanted to come up, Sean Jensen and I, we wanted to come up with a book that just talked about what was Charles Tillman like before he was the celebrity, before he had the fame, before people knew who he really was. And hopefully kids can identify with the child that I was and some of the mistakes, good and bad, that I made as a child. And hopefully that they can know that they're not alone. Like, yeah, I was a kid. I was in 8th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade. Like, I know what you're going through. It doesn't change. You know, it's same problems. As we all have the same problems as kids, right? And I just want them to know that I have those same problems.
But you can move past it
and,
you know, have an inspirational and wonderful life.
Exactly. And hopefully There's a kid out there that can identify with what I went through, and hopefully my situation can shine a little bit of light on what that child's going through right now. And you're exactly right.
Did you learn anything about yourself when you were writing this book, Charles?
Did I what now?
Learn anything about yourself that you weren't aware of before you started writing this?
No, I learned that I got a pretty good memory.
Oh yeah,
right, listening and remembering all these stories, like detailed stories. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know how to identify with my feelings, but as an adult, I can identify with those feelings now. And hence, you know, let's write this book. So that's what made it cool.
You know, and I have found something out, and I can't wait to read this and pass it along to my kids. My dad died when I was 10, and that's all I knew. So it wasn't, I guess it wasn't as difficult for me as if someone else lost, because that's all I knew. So I had to adapt to change, like my husband, for instance, you know, the mom, the dad, the sister, the brother, the dog. And, you know, he had a pretty normal upbringing, and I adapt to changes much quicker than my husband does.
Right. And I'm the same way. I can adapt to any kind of change. I don't know. I just, if it don't work out, we'll keep moving. you know, something else. You just got to adapt with your environment. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Charles, speaking of change, you were a longtime favorite here in Chicago with the Bears. Now you're playing for a team, the Carolina Panthers. They're having an okay year, I guess, huh?
Yeah, we're not doing too bad.
Not awful.
I'm happy with the choice I chose to come to Charlotte. They're doing pretty good.
And what about the Bears beating the Packers on Thanksgiving Day at Lambeau when they're honoring Brett Favre and Bart Starr's there? It's like, how does that happen? Were you shocked?
Yeah, I didn't get to see the game because I was actually playing on Thanksgiving too, and I was on the plane. So by the time I got off my plane, all the games and stuff were over with. But
were you rubbing your eyes looking at you know, your sports feed, going what?
Well, I knew it was a good game based on social media, tweets, Facebook, things like that. I heard it was a good game, but no, man, it's dude is a living legend, and you know they retired his number. I'm glad I can say I got a sack on him, fumble on him, but it was really an honor and a privilege to play against Brett Favre.
I was just going to say it's all because Ditka put that jersey on for that commercial.
I think that has something to do with it.
Remember, he put the Packers jersey on
for McDonald's commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean that the time space continuum
funny.
Yeah, but funny. You know, now all of a sudden the Bears are winning and the Pack's not doing that well.
Well, that's a good thing for you guys, right?
Well, yeah, I say it like I'm not happy, but I am happy. It's just a weird thing. I also hear you do a great Yoko Ono impression.
He does not do a Yoko Ono impression,
you
Wendy.
You don't?
No.
I don't. No. I don't know who she is, but I've never heard her talk. I think she's quiet. She's very silent.
Oh, no. How embarrassing. Charles, for people who don't know, your current team, the Carolina Panthers, sit at an 11-0 record, the only undefeated team in the NFL. I don't know if you were watching the game last night, but New England took a hard loss to the Broncos. Were you excited to hear this?
I don't know if I was excited to hear it. I'm just excited about my team. I don't really care about the other team. My excitement is all geared toward mine. But it's not about the regular season. It's really about the postseason.
Sure.
And right now, I'm taking it one game at a time, but at the same time, I am excited that we're undefeated.
I am just loving your book. It's The Middle School Rules of Charles Tillman, Peanut, of course, and just about setting goals and dealing with death. Just a wonderful little book. And what's your target demo on this? What age?
I'd probably say 10 to 15 years old.
Perfect.
You know, I think you could get a good grasp of what I went through.
This could be a cartoon pretty easily. You know, Charles, it really could.
We'll see.
Maybe something there. All right.
I like it. Continue all the good work you're doing with the Charles Tillman Cornerstone Foundation. What's your website again?
CharlesTillman.org.
You. Good luck to you with the Panthers.
We miss you, Charles. We really do.
We really do.
Miss you guys, too.
Well, thanks so much. Have a great holiday, and take care. Keep the good stuff coming, Charles. It's Charles Tillman, everybody. The book is called The Middle School Rules of Charles Peanut Tillman.
It's really cute. I love this little cartoon of him throwing a peanut.
Yeah.
And just
back
little
then, they
things.
Didn't have footballs, Wendy. You couldn't afford a football. Kids would play with a peanut instead of a football.
See, but look at this. Peanut slips in school. He got an F on a math test, but you can move beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really cute. Yep. Maybe I should read this.
You should definitely read that book. For you.
Is there something about Yoko Ono?
There's no Yoko Ono mentions at all. Are you going to ask every guest now if they do an impression of
Yoko
Ono?
Yes, I am. And you know what? Someday it's going to pay off.
One of them will pay off. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is strange that the Bears, who have played so up and down this year,
mostly down,
beat the Packers.
I know. I still really can't get over that. And I have a great friend, Lisa, who is a Packer fan. And when I say fan, I mean it. She knows
She's
more.
She's a big fan, isn't she?
It's weird to. She knows more about football than a lot of guys I know.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not a fair weather fan.
Right.
Her dad was. I hate the Pack. And so, you know, I was sending her texts like, oh, yeah, good luck. Because I didn't think the Bears had any chance of beating the Packers.
We were driving back from Wisconsin. Now, I made a vow after the first game of the season that I'm not going to watch the Bears. But they were on the radio, so I thought, technically,
that's
I can
not
listen
watching.
To the Bears. Right. So I had on almost the whole second half as we drove back from Wisconsin to home on Thanksgiving. And Aaron Rodgers. Who's Neil Rodgers? Aaron Rodgers got the
first
Packers.
Football player on the moon.
Is that who he was? Neil Rodgers was the first football player on the moon?
Yes.
He got him all the way to like the 8-yard line, and you go, oh, okay, that's how the Bears end it with that kind of a play. And then like four downs in a row, they couldn't move the ball at all. And that's Aaron Rodgers, one of the best in the business.
He's tainted and tarnished.
Is he? How could, based on what? What are you saying that about?
His chick.
Oh. Who? No, should I know who this is? Was he dating somebody famous?
Yeah.
Was he?
She used to go out with Jason Sudeikis.
Who is that?
Olivia.
De Havilland?
No. What's her name?
Is he dating Olivia De Havilland?
No.
Maid Marian from Robin Hood? Not what's Olivia Wilde.
No. What's her name? Maybe I'm getting it. Munn.
Olivia Munn. Oh, right. He was dating her, wasn't he? Oh, man.
She's not that great.
So they broke
She's
up and it ruined him?
No, he's currently dating
he's
her.
He's still dating her. All right.
How come you're not up on this?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, that's not who I'm thinking of. Yeah, Olivia Munn and Aaron Rodgers.
She used to be on The Daily Show for a while.
Yeah,
she was a correspondent on The Daily Show.
Well,
she's very talented.
Well, she's messing him up now. Weak legs.
Is that what it comes down to?
I think so.
Is that what it is?
I think that's absolutely it.
But now, like, here's what the Bears have done. Like, early on in the season, you go, okay, just keep being bad because then we'll get a good draft pick or two out of this. But now they've screwed that up.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I know I got...
Was it a good game? Did you watch the game? Was it as good as it... Yeah.
Jim makes me watch... I know you said I'm not watching any of the Bears games.
I can't
games
watch
anymore.
It. It's bad for my heart.
It's not that bad.
My cardiologist forbid me.
No, because they've been pulling off some surprises. Bad for your heart. Watch the Hawks.
Yeah.
Oh, my
well,
God.
That's been a little up and down, hasn't
it? Oh, yeah. But Jim makes me watch. He goes, you got to watch. We're in Chicago. Whether you like them or not, you got to watch. So I watch. And I got Olivia Wilde and Olivia Munn mixed up.
Oh, yeah. You got to know your Olivias.
You do.
I
don't.
I study. I want to know who all the Olivias are. I really do. All right. We're almost out of time. Roe and Ann will be in just a little bit to tell us what they have coming up. And I don't know. We're doing something on tomorrow's show about the art of kissing, about knowing how to best kiss other people because it's the holidays and you got to know how to kiss people.
Are you a good kisser?
Oh, man. Yes.
Not on your hands.
Oh, no. No.
I practiced kissing.
I think most people did that, right? When they were younger?
It was a girl's slumber party. No, I'm talking with another girl. My friend Sue.
All right.
Because you practice because, you know, you want to be good.
Can you slow down? I'm going to dim the lights just a little bit. I want to hear this with dimmer lights.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Some French music.
We're out of time.
All right. Roe and Ann are coming in just a little bit. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.